you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G. Ah!
Ooh, ooh! Arsenio Hall is here! Looking good!
You're a f***ing asshole. I wish you were on the goddamn Edmund Fitzgerald freak.
Let's let it breathe. You don't create a fine wine and then drink it right out of the grape bucket.
Dean, I reject you totally.
You and him!
Stop yelling.
And
I believe I'm going to stick my stuff your
I just want to say, you know, can we all get along? Can we get along?
If you and Steven had babies, they'd be so good looking. They would.
Because Steven's all tan.
And now
is that. So he doesn't. Are you a regular duck? And you watch all the time him.
Our feature presentation.
Good morning, everybody. It's the Kevin and Bean Show. It's 5:31, and it is Thursday, the 12th of Aprilingus.
What's up, TV boy?
Yeah.
What's up,
Mark Thompson?
It's a long story.
We got time.
Yeah, a long show ahead of us.
Last night I went to a charity fundraiser for the Anti-Defamation League.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I hate them.
Now, it was to honor a friend of mine who does a lot of charity work, and he helps our charity a lot. So I went, and I dressed up in a suit and tie, by the way, which I'm thrilled about, A.
And all you wanted to be was at home in your pajamas watching Lost.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm there, and I walk inside, and somebody comes up and says hi to me, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what, this is the Anti-Defamation League. They've got to hate me for some reason.
Sure.
Me or Bean or whoever. I mean, from whatever, whoever says anything on this show, it's just all of us. So I figure I need to hide.
Like, I don't figure somehow you're going to be in a spotlight and they're going to ask you to explain some of your remarks.
I don't want them to know I'm there. So I come walking in and there's TV cameras there and just from one station. And they just jump out and they go, he's here. And I sort of came walking by. I was like, what the? And they put a camera in my face and they said, what do you think about the Don Imus thing?
Oh, no.
You were so relieved.
Because somebody like tipped them off that I was there and they wanted to interview me because they thought I had insight into this BS.
They were there specifically for you.
No, they were doing a story on the Anti-Defamation League.
Oh, okay.
And the Don Imus thing, who's the DJ in New York.
I gotcha.
And they wanted to know what I thought.
Wow. Mm.
And, you know, I don't think. Really?
Is that what you said?
That's my policy.
So apparently whatever you said, though, was impactful because apparently it aired. I guess Psycho Mike has heard from somebody who saw you on the TV.
Well, I don't think it was impactful. I can almost guarantee you that. And it's funny, too, because afterwards you think about 100 things you could have said that would have been better.
Sure.
Right.
But she said she led off with, what do you think about MSNBC dropping him from their TV coverage? Because they had cameras in his studio and they filmed him and put it on TV. And I said something about, first of all, that's fascinating TV. Have you ever watched a guy sit there and talk? Have you ever seen, he's like this old dude, he wears a cowboy hat in New York, thinks he's a cowboy. And then I said something about him being crazy for 15 or 20 years. I'm just surprised people are just now finding out about it. And I kind of walked on because I didn't know, like, now all of a sudden there's cameras on me and now I'm commenting. And then I think, oh, it's my own company.
Right.
What do I do?
That's true.
So I ran. I just ran.
You know, I'm surprised they were able to find you because I can't imagine a better disguise for K-Rock's Kevin than a suit and tie. I mean, I would think that they would be looking all around for you and then see a guy go by in a suit and tie and go, well, that can't be Kevin.
Right. And that was my first concern, actually. I forgot to tell you that was when the lights came on, I thought, oh, I hope somebody doesn't see me in my suit and tie. That's not the image I want out there. I haven't been in a suit and tie since my nephew's wedding, you know, 6 months ago.
Yeah, it happens about once a year, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I can't wear a suit twice, by the way, because it's so long in between suits that I get a lot fatter. And you know, whatever the last time was I wore a suit, if I go to put it on now, there's no way it's going to fit. So I have to start all over again.
I magically lose mine.
Yes, you do.
I do. And it's like, I don't know. Where could it have gone? Now I have to buy a new one. Do I really have to wear one? And then I can get out of it.
How can you lose a suit?
Well, come on. There's ways. I'm saying. Then if it's... See, if it's just put on your suit, it's different. Then you got to go down to the store and buy a suit.
So half the time...
That's true.
You get out of it.
It's just given up on.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
You know, you would think there's no war going on with the amount of coverage that this Ima story is getting. The media certainly seem to be obsessed with it. I did a radio interview yesterday on the topic.
What?
Our friend Brian, we've known forever, is an afternoon talk show host in Seattle. He called me and wanted my take on it as well. And I kind of thought the same thing you did, which is, what do I know?
Yeah, why would they ask us?
But the only thing I will say, and the only point I wanted to make in perhaps I have too much sympathy for what Don Imus is going through, because you can't do a radio show of any with any opinions on it and not offend some people. And I'm telling you that there's no way he would have known that a remark like that, because he's probably made a lot of other remarks that have just gone under the
thousands.
Yeah, there's no way to know which one is going to be the one that's going to tick people off and get in trouble. There mm-hmm. just isn't, because there's always going to be somebody offended by everything you say. To what degree, you don't know, and you never know what kind of pressure is going to be put on your company to fire you or whatever. It's just the risk you take every time you try to say something that you think is funny.
Yeah, it's true. Although, I think, nappy headed kind of, that kind of shouts out, don't say it.
Well, and hoes. And we're talking about, my problem with it mostly was they're girls playing basketball. It just seems like they shouldn't be a target
for that
kind of comment. Oh.
It just Lisa, they're probably criminals.
Sense.
Okay, see, now that was just a joke. Obviously, I don't mean that. They're,
right, obviously.
Bright, articulate, well-educated women.
I was thinking about this last night as well. That's the kind of humor that Bean does on a daily basis, which is, what's the worst thing you could say right now?
Right.
And then it's funny to say it. Not because
exactly.
you mean it, but just because it's funny.
You mean it, right.
And I just thought, we're so going down sometime really soon.
Yeah, that's true.
There's no question about that. And I'll tell you what else is scary. That this is what I wish I had said. The Jesse Jackson and the Al Sharpens of the world are such con artists. They're so... I have no respect for them whatsoever. And I don't think they speak for a majority of black people. I think they just use the word racism to beat people up and get money for their cause.
Yeah.
And it's a crime what they do.
I don't even know how upset they are by this, because if you run down a list of things that they ought to be really spending their time working on to benefit the black community, this has got to be about number 800 on that list. Yet
right.
they know that this is going to be headlines, this is going to be TV interviews, this is going to make them more famous.
Yeah,
that's why they do it.
Well, I think it's unbelievable coincidence to perfectly parallel how ridiculous, both Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson are, and a lot of their claims, how they have very little merit. Just yesterday, it came out that the Duke lacrosse players really had absolutely nothing to do with this rape charge, and that they were completely innocent, had nothing to do with anything. And if you guys remember, about a year ago when this all broke, both Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton were demanding that these guys be put away because they were... committing crimes.
You're right, Jesse Jackson said that they were going to pay for the college education of the accusers, whether they turned out to be, actually raped or not.
Yeah.
That's how much he was in on their side, without knowing any of the evidence personally.
And are they going to say a word now?
No.
No, of course not.
No. Are they going to say, I'm sorry, we were wrong?
No, God, no. Here's other college athletes that have had their lives turned upside down by something that they had to do with, but
they're college athletes that that wear vests. So really, if somebody's going to get unfairly accused, they can use a little hardship.
Believe me, I went to Rutgers. I'll tell you, the girls' Rutgers basketball team would serve the Duke lacrosse team.
I'm sure.
No, I saw that press conference that those three guys that were accused, and to make sure you understand what Psycho Mike said, they came out yesterday, basically the state of North Carolina came out and said, it's not that we don't have enough evidence to try them and we still think they did it. They were innocent. They didn't have anything to do with this. This is not, they're not getting away with anything.
Right.
Our bad, basically. And one of the guys stood up and he said, God forbid somebody is in this situation who doesn't have the kind of resources and the kind of time that we have to have defended ourselves for the past, 6 months or whatever it's been, because they could easily, had they been poor kids, they could easily be in jail by now.
Yeah.
For real,
For real and for a long time, yeah.
For a long time, yeah. So it was, but you're right. That would have been a better use of maybe the Reverend's time than
than spending all this time, you know, whipping people up over the I Miss comment.
If I were a black person that was receiving, you know, racist kind of treatment, I'd be pissed.
Sure.
Because to me, that they're, you know, not serving the actual people, but they're crying wolf on other things. And it just, it makes everybody not know what to trust and what to not trust.
Yeah.
I just think they're con artists. That's all I think.
Well, that's why I'm glad that the white community has a guy like you that can go TV and clarify things
and
for us.
And say it well, yeah. I didn't say anything about that. Afterwards, I was like, oh, man, I should have said this. I should have said that. But, you know, I don't think on my feet. All right.
Let's go to our black correspondent on the scene. Dwan, what do you think?
Hey, Kevin and Bain. It's Dwan from Los Angeles, California. Let me see that song from the Soul Train theme.
Well, we don't need you.
Soul Train.
No, we're asking about
that. Soul Train.
What do you think about that?
Da 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 da. Soul Train.
No, about the nappy headed.
Soul Train.
That's not helping.
Da 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 da.
Okay, well, that clears it up.
Are we? But we're cool, right?
We cool.
All right. It's Thursday. It's the 12th of April. Lingus, I already told you that. We have Chris Pronger on the show today. Anaheim Ducks in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Hey, quadruple overtime in the Canucks game last night, the playoffs, by the way. Quadruple overtime.
They do the shootout during the regular season, but then they play for days in the playoffs.
Really?
It does. It turns into cricket.
Four overtimes is crazy. There must be people just laying down on the ice. All right, I'm tired. Just someone score. Also on today's show, we have our Swingers recap.
Remember,
we hooked up Craig in quotations with Lola for a Swingers vacation, a full week vacation. And they went and they came back, and now we're going to talk to him about it.
Oh, I'm so excited to find out how it went, because I don't know how she felt about it. But the last time we spoke to them, when they had just gotten to know each other, they were getting ready to get on the plane, he was into her, remember?
He really
had high hopes for that week and even for when they got back. I mean, it sounded like he was super jazzed to be with her. So it'd be interesting to find out if they're still speaking to one another.
Oh, we know the answer to that. There's no way. He wants to, she doesn't. I mean, that's a given. Also, the drummer for The Germs is having some trouble. Apparently, he was washing his hair with acid. I don't know the story. I didn't read it closely.
I don't think that's right.
Mushrooms? I'm confused on that story. But
there is some controversy over what the Newport Beach police arrested him for. I mean, we're hearing a bunch of different stories, so we're going to try to find out from him what's really going on.
And
he's unbiased. He'll tell us the truth.
Absolutely. And Quentin Tarantino in the studio today.
Dude.
Oh. Talking about Grindhouse. So that's all coming up this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show, 743. 743.
Oh, I wish.
543. We'll take a quick break and come back with Ralph Showbiz Beat next.
That looks like Ralph Garman here with the Showbiz Beat. Good morning, Ralph.
Nope.
Ralph has the... What?
Nope.
That's not you?
No.
Wow.
Ralph has the best shirt on. It says, are you on the list?
Yep.
And I think that's
from last
Doc on the Rock. Oh.
No, it's from Heroes.
Oh, Heroes. Okay.
Yeah.
Thought it was Doc's list.
I think you were on the list. That too.
First, it was Save the Cheerleader, Save the World.
Oh, right.
That was Are You in the
That's
List.
That's right.
And now it's...
Nappy Headed Host.
Time to Save the World.
Right.
Something like that.
Hey, Ralph, let me ask you a question. I heard a rumor yesterday. Tell me if this is true. Speaking of Heroes, which we all love, and we can't wait for it to come back, which is, what, a week from Monday? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. The guy, I don't know the character's name, but the guy who has, like, the nuclear power.
Yes.
You know the guy I'm talking about?
Yes,
who,
I do.
Like, okay. Is he one of the Geico cavemen?
I don't know.
I'm going to go with no.
You That's mean, really? What I thought, too. Yeah, I heard he's
one
of the Geico cavemen.
The actor,
same actor is in both, yeah.
It's completely plausible.
Hmm. Okay, I just thought you're our Heroes expert. I would ask you, but we'll do some research on that.
Do not have that information at my fingertips.
Email
the answer is bean at krock.com. Bean. Any other questions you have about Heroes or cavemen or Geico insurance? Bean at krock.com. Please, just deluge him. Britney Spears is ticked off at her manager. I mentioned that she's looking to fire Larry Rudolph, her current manager. And no one really knew why. Now details are starting to surface, according to Us Weekly magazine. It's because he pushed her into rehab. She's pissed off about it.
Well, this rehab's definitely going to stick.
Wow. We've been trying to get her help, and she doesn't feel like she needs it, says a source close to the inner circle of Britney Spears' business associates. Also, Rudolph reportedly told one of Britney's best friends not to accept any calls from her the night that she shaved her head. It was tough love, according to the inside source.
Hmm.
And I guess she got so frustrated she couldn't get a hold of people that she shaved her hair off. So how'd that work out for you?
We don't really know exactly what happened, but this is, you know, when people always ask, don't they have anyone around them that can give them good advice?
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Well, the problem is often...
the people around them don't step up and give them good advice. They just nod their heads and say whatever you say, Brittany. So this guy apparently was trying to save her life, and she doesn't like him for it.
Right.
She's pissed off. Heath Ledger told reporters that he and his partner Michelle Williams are not yet married, but when they do tie the knot, they won't be making a public announcement.
Fantastic.
It's refreshing.
He said, we try not to talk about it. We keep it kind of our own thing. It's obviously very sacred. People write stories regardless. The stories haven't necessarily been bad, so we're letting people run with their assumptions. There's one reason people speculating why Heath Ledger has not yet married Michelle Williams. I think you all know what it is.
What?
Oh, I thought for sure Mike was busy coming over.
Heath Ledger. Oh, yes. It's like a big sausage. Oh, yes. That's right, Jake Gyllenhaal. It is. It's a species spicy sausage. How do you like that? Oh, yes.
Mike's spinning over there like the Tasmanian devil. I'm assuming he has to be queuing that up. It's the only possible thing he could be doing.
By the way, he queues that up every day 50 times. Now he went to the Brokeback Robot clip. And I was like, why the robot? He's like, hey, play that one.
It would be funny if out of the blue.
But he's talking about the actual guy.
I'm talking about Heath Ledger.
It's the same exact content. It's just it's robots.
Why did you not make creative decisions so much over there? Just go.
just stand there and be pretty.
Just go what you think is the obvious answer. Go with the definitive answer. Consider it like the $20,000 pyramid or something. Just answer what you think the celebrities have.
Like they say on House, Psycho Mike, if we want a horse, don't give us a zebra, all right?
That's the first time we've asked for that drop in a year.
Right. And he wants to throw a changeup. let's take a look at the celebrity crime beat, shall we?
All right.
Things went from bad to a whole lot worse yesterday for Girls Gone Wild video king Joe Francis.
Is it really a judge gone wild?
Well, I mentioned he was picked up by cops at the Panama City airport because he was
black.
Yeah, right. That's it. No, Joe Francis isn't black. Oh. He was. The judge had sent out a warrant for his arrest because he had not attended to the letter of the agreement he made with these seven women who were suing him. Now, it turns out, yesterday he was indicted on federal tax evasion charges.
Ooh, they're really going
after serious.
Him.
For illegally deducting more than $20 million in phony business expenses.
Dude.
He could go to jail for that.
How do you even fake $20 million in business expenses?
More importantly, how do you try to kid anybody it takes $20 million to videotape sloppy drunk college girls lifting their shirts up? What is the possible overhead on that operation? You got to buy like a $12 pitcher of beer once in a while. That's really about it. You own the video camera. How much does videotape cost? $20 million in expenses?
Not much, yeah.
Yeah. He also tried to hide income through using offshore companies and other bogus setups, according to the charges.
Wow.
He had some Cayman Island accounts. All kinds of good stuff. If convicted, he faces a maximum of 10 years in prison with fines up to $500,000. I would like to videotape Joe Francis in prison in the showers and
that's great.
See guys gone wild when he bends over to pick up the soap.
Oh.
Easy, psycho. Yesterday, Snoop Dogg pled no contest to felony drug and gun charges. He took 5 years probation and 800 hours of community service to get out of what could have been a very lengthy prison sentence.
800 hours?
Yeah.
Wow.
This goes back to Snoop's run-in with the police at Burbank's Bob Hope Airport on October 26th, when he was arrested on suspicion of transporting marijuana. Later that day, police found a gun in Snoop's home. So he had to take the deal. 5 years probation, 800 hours of community service.
See how they come at black people?
Ralph, I can't keep the timeline straight of all of those run-ins he had with the police over that several-month period, but is he now out of the woods, or does he still have other charges that he still has to be called up on?
This is just the Burbank charges. He's still got
Orange County was one, right?
LAX, too, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, did he have an LAX and a John Wayne? Did he go for the
John
trifecta?
John Wayne was the baton, right? Was that where John Wayne was?
I thought the baton was Burbank. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, I know.
I think
he's on the airport tour.
It was John Wayne. And then there was another issue, him coming out of the Tonight Show parking lot. I remember, too, when they searched
him. That's right.
So he's got
He's
still got some splaining to do.
Yeah.
Last night, Haley Scarnato was kicked off American Idol, giving me officially no more reason to watch. She was the last cute girl in the top 10.
She was hot. I saw a clip of that on Jimmy Kimmel's show, and she looked cute.
She's very cute.
You don't get rid of
her. And the way she was going, she was going to end up topless performing on the show, because she did wear less every single week that she remained.
Yeah. Simon said, you have an excellent plan here, Haley. Just
wear as little clothing as possible.
That's an excellent plan.
Yes, that's a great plan.
I'm in.
Meanwhile, I was talking about Sanjaya. Yeah. That giant, freakish, wide mouth, bass smile of his. He's still there. Wasn't even in the bottom three, by the way.
Again. Freak. I read a story yesterday where one of the musical director, do they have that on that show?
Sure.
Says that he thinks he could win. That'd be awesome.
It's going to be hilarious if that's the case.
Yes, it would.
P. Diddy Sean, Daddy P. Dottie Diddy, Diddy Dum Diddy Doo Holmes, Combs is, well, he may be spoiling his twin girls even more than Kevin spoils his. He's got newborn twin girls, Jesse James and Delilah Starr, and they're newborns, okay?
Right.
This is freshly born, I'm talking about. These are not old girls.
Right, they're like 2 months old or something.
They're young, you're saying.
Yes. He said, I've started buying them gifts like diamond earrings and diamond necklaces and bracelets. They have to get their ears pierced maybe in like a couple of months. And they have to have the stuff be there. I wanted to wait for the first birthday, but I've already bought the stuff. They have little diamond necklaces. Really cute things. You'd be amazed at the things they have.
Yeah.
You got to go looking for stuff. He added.
Oh, my God.
They sound like the kind of things that infants could swallow is what they sound like to me.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
No,
it wouldn't. They choked on diamonds. That'd be the funniest story ever.
Only because it's Diddy.
Maybe I shouldn't have bought that necklace.
Can I hear your Diddy again?
Maybe I shouldn't have bought that necklace.
Junior.
And Whitney Houston apparently is through with Ray J.
Oh, say it's not so.
Yeah.
Ray J.
According to In Touch magazine, Whitney threw him out over the sex tape with ex-girlfriend Kim Kardashian. She said initially that it didn't bother her, but now that it sold over 300,000 copies, she's getting a little cheesed off about the whole thing and apparently has ended the relationship. This is the woman who was married to Bobby Brown, by the way.
No kidding.
For a decade.
Yeah.
He's out there committing, like, serial murder, and I think he blew up a federal building.
I don't think he did any of that.
He shot the president. No. This guy's done a lot of crap that she put up with. This guy makes one sex tape with with a former girlfriend before he even met her, and she kicks him to the curb, as the kids say.
Yeah.
Come on, Whitney. Don't you just want to dance with somebody? Isn't love the greatest love of all? Don't you want my bodyguard?
All right.
Oh,
I don't know much about Whitney's career. Best I can come up with. Today's celebrity birthdays. Wow, I got a snootful.
A snootful?
Snootful.
Okay. Right.
Ed O'Neill, who played Al Bundy, of course, and Married with Children, 61 years old today. David Letterman, one of the best goddamn talk show hosts ever.
In history.
Sure ever. Is. 60 years old today. David Cassidy! Remember David Cassidy? Remember going to Vegas to see David Cassidy when we took all the K-Rock listeners? We had a singles party.
I remember
there.
A singles party. I remember Vegas.
Oh, that's right. Kevin didn't go.
I don't remember him.
He boycotted David Cassidy.
They were going, oh, you got to go backstage and get your picture taken with him. I was like, I'm in Vegas. I can gamble and drink. Why would I want to do that?
You gamble and drink every day of your life.
And?
You could have taken 5 minutes out for a partridge, for God's sake.
No.
He's 57 years old today. Andy Garcia. Very talented actor, turns 51. I just caught The Untouchables again over the weekend. I hadn't seen that in a while. The Untouchables with Sean Connery and Kevin Costner and Andy Garcia.
Great movie.
Long time ago.
Jeez, like 86, I want to say. But it's been a while.
That's
but,
a good movie.
Damn,
he's good in that. Art Alexakis from Everclear is 45 years old today. Nick Hexum from 311 turns 37. Nicholas Brendan. Xander from Buffy the Vampire Slayer is 36 years old today, as is Shannon Doherty. Of course, from Charmed and Beverly Hills 90210. Guy Berryman, bassist for Coldplay, turns 29. And Claire Danes.
Oh.
Actress Claire Danes. What has she been up to? I haven't seen her in a while.
Yeah, I don't know.
I remember her in the Terminator movie, I think. She played that girl.
The girl in the Terminator movie. Right.
Exactly. She played her. She's 28 years old.
Bean at KROQ.com if you know.
Beans. Send all your information to Bean.
I heard she's one of the Geico cavemen. Is that true?
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Can I start with a complaint with the email?
Okay.
Sure.
I got this email, and then I got about 40 others that followed. And it just says, conversation, it just says birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from someone I don't know named Vicky. And it just says, 2007 birthday gift wish list. And then it gives you a link to go to her blog so that you know what to get her for her birthday.
And this is somebody you don't know, somebody who just randomly mailed this to you so you can get her a gift?
Me and about 40 other people. So then...
Oh, my God.
So then everybody else replies to all, and they say things like, hello, I'm Vicky's friend Jessica. I'm going to get her the NARS blush. Nobody touch that, okay? Thanks.
Oh, no.
And I have to get 40 emails from all of her friends about what they're going to get her for their for
her
birthday.
None of whom you know.
How did I get on that list?
Don't know.
Why? I didn't even know people did that for their own friends.
Yeah, that's a little odd.
Who puts out a list of things they want for their birthday?
Yeah, that is. It's just like a wedding registry. Like,
yes.
Except for your birthday, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that I missed that one. That was interesting. Dear Kevin and Bean, this email begins from K-Rock listener Andrew. I was just wondering why it is that most of you radio guys seem to have side jobs or gigs. Kevin, for instance, is a so-called announcer. Ralph's talent is widely known to be spread all over Hollywood. Psycho Mike works as a trainer. Former sports guy Money does his, you know, sports talk radio show plus the Laker games. Petros does the PMS show plus the Pros versus Joes. Does one job not pay enough, or is it just that you guys have so much free time so that you get to do other stuff that you want to do? Just a curious fan, Andrew. I've mentioned this before, Andrew. I'm glad you wrote. It's a good question. But everybody who is working in radio is just clawing their way out. I mean, they know they're at the bottom of the barrel. They know it can't possibly last. They know how disappointing it is to their friends and family that this is the career that they've chosen. So they're all looking for something that they can do that has a little bit more prestige that goes along with it, right? I mean, let's face it. You know, Kevin goes to a family reunion. He doesn't want, oh, that's the radio guy. That's the guy who's the booth announcer for the Grammys. Now you got something. Now you're doing something people care about.
Unless radio, I'm mad at that.
Well, then yeah, what do you hopefully do? They don't hear it, right? Radio is just so low on the food chain that everybody's trying to get out. That's the answer to your question, Andrew.
Dear Kevin and Bean, is Bean contagious? For the past 7.5 years, I've been listening to your show. I never one time agreed with Bean, but my heart sank last Friday when I heard that my beloved Peeps were also adored by Bean.
Oh, no.
Remember those little yellow Peeps for Easter that we were talking about?
Yes. Sure.
And ridiculed by the rest of you. And then, if that wasn't the end of my life right there, I learned that it was the same for candy corn. I love candy corn. And so does Bean. I think I might kill myself. This is directed straight to me. Since you've been working with Bean so long, I was hoping you could shed some light on whether or not Bean is contagious. Because I don't want to ruin the life of my family as well. You seem unfazed by years of exposure to Bean. Do you have a vaccine? I fear it's too late for me, but I would really like the vaccine for my family so they can be safe from me.
Wow. Well, I think it's interesting that there's somebody else out there who loves the Peeps and loves the candy corn. How about that?
I hate to be the one that told you this, but I told you so.
Exactly. See what I'm saying? All right, here's an email from our token blacklister, Anel, who, as you know, is our representative, our spokesperson for all issues black. I think he's a much better go-to guy than Reverend Al or Jesse Jackson, to be honest.
No question.
Here's what Anel writes in this morning about the Don Imus nappy-headed hoe situation. Guys, what's really funny about this whole Imus thing is that if he had just waited another week to lose his mind, he could have used nappy-headed hoes and called the Duke rape accuser that. Everybody would have just agreed with him. Nobody likes her. I've seen her. She really does have the nappy hair, and she strips for college boys. That's her job, so she really is a hoe. Yeah. Who could complain about that? Timing really is everything, I guess. Good point.
And I went to a thing last night, and Channel 11 asked me about this. It's a radio DJ from New York who called the basketball team. Saw you on the 10 o'clock news on Fox 11 commenting on Don Imus at the anti-defamation dinner. Hello, Anna? You at the anti-defamation dinner making a statement about lines that don't get crossed is like, well, hell, it's like Don Imus commenting on Michael Richards at an NAACP rally. I'm just saying, Kat. Yeah, I don't think I'm the guy to go to. And they went to me. And it was a surprise to me. We do have
the tape. Do we have the tape? Oh, awesome.
It was a surprise to me. And I want you to hear how quickly I bail on lines that definitely you do not cross. I start saying it for some godforsaken reason, and then I realize I'm going to get beat up with it, so I change my...
The cable network announcing today they are canceling their televised simulcast of Imus in the Morning.
That was a very exciting TV show. Did you ever watch it? Yeah, I think he might possibly already be dead, but he's been a crazy man for years. And it's funny to me that people are just now realizing that maybe he's out of his mind.
At an Anti-Defamation League awards ceremony tonight, many felt Imus was simply reaping what he sowed after referring to the Rutgers women's basketball team as nappy-headed hoes.
There are lines that you push, but this one is, why would anyone say anything like that? I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So that's
you were
me
so close.
Yes, I was.
That's the standard.
There are real definite lines.
lines that you do not cross.
Right.
Obviously, everybody's, you know, trying to get ratings, trying to get noticed, trying to be this and that. But there are lines that you just don't cross, and that's one of them.
Well, Kevin Ryder was lying.
All right, let's talk about this FCC indecency training that we have to do. About 10 times a year, our company sends out an email, and they say, just to make sure everybody's on the same page, we got to go through and get your refresher course, make sure you know exactly what the FCC rules are. And there's no rule on the planet that's more vague than that. If you want to be offended by something, you can be offended by something. So, and it changes on a daily basis. So they send this out just as they cover their ass so they can fire us if anything happens.
They want to be able to point to, well, it was just a few weeks ago, Kevin and Bean, that you acknowledged that you understood that this wasn't acceptable behavior on the radio. And then they can fire you, and then they don't have to pay you. Right.
So I wrote on the bottom of mine in pen, the FCC rules are not understandable by any human being. They're too vague, and I will never understand them, Kevin. And they didn't accept that. So now I have to do it again.
Oh.
You have to retake the quiz and say yes?
Yes. Oh. Yesterday, Mike tried to have intern do it, Circus Vargas. And she printed out a certificate for herself instead of him. So that didn't work out as
well.
That's
not going well at all.
But we can do it on the phone. So do we have a second just to...
Oh.
So I can get it over with?
You can do the indecency quiz on the phone? I didn't even know that. Yeah. I've been doing it online. Okay.
Yeah, the K-Rock FCC indecency training. I have the number.
Fantastic.
Just take a quick second, and then we'll get to Ralph Showbiz Beat.
It is a colossal waste of time, whether it's online or on the phone, though. That's for sure.
Oh, there we
go. Just do it because you have to.
Hello, and thank you for calling CBS Radio's FCC Indecency Regulations Training. The following interactive training program is intended to test your knowledge of the FCC's regulations for obscenity, indecency, and profanity.
Fantastic.
By taking the multiple choice examination that follows, you will be asked to make a certification concerning the policy statement on obscenity, indecency, and profanity that has been provided to you by management.
I don't know.
Which explains the company's policy on the broadcast of obscene, indecent, and profane language or other time program content. If you'd like to take the examination now, press 1.
What if you don't, but you have to?
No kidding. Let's get out of the way.
Oh, we're on hold. Okay.
It is a waste of time.
You've chosen to take the examination.
Yes.
I will ask you a series of following questions. You respond by saying, 1, the FCC would object to such content, or 2, the FCC would not object to such content.
All right.
Let's begin. Let's say a woman you work with in the studio is a smelly whore. You're on the air live, and you say, Jesus, does your p*** stink? Would the FCC, 1, not be happy with that language, 2, be happy with that language?
I would think not. Should I go 1?
It's hard to tell with the FCC, but yeah, let's try 1 and see what happens.
But what if you can see the fumes coming off her?
Oh my gosh.
Would they, 1, still not be happy, 2,
I guess,
be happy?
I guess they'd be happy then, I guess.
Yeah, let's try 2 and see what happens.
No, it's never okay to talk about that horse.
Oh, geez. Who can tell?
Even if the stink could peel paint.
Come on. Lisa, do you know this guy, or what's the deal?
This is disgusting.
Wow.
Question number 2.
All right.
Say you work with an annoying freak who keeps talking about Pluto all the time.
Yeah.
Hey.
Accidentally on the air, the microphones are live, and you say, shut the f*** up about Pluto. Would the FCC, 1, be unhappy with this content? Mm-hmm. 2, be happy with this content?
Well, that one I know. You can't use the F word, so let's say 1.
So unhappy. All right.
I'm sorry, you're wrong.
What?
Even the FCC knows how annoying Bean can be.
Wow.
It's perfectly okay to tell Bean to f*** off live on the air.
Fantastic.
Wow. Let's all do it, shall we? F*** off, Bean.
The third and final
question.
Oh, excellent.
Let's say you work with a steroided freak who goes, ooh, every time you play 30 Seconds to Mars. You want to kick him right in the c***.
Uh-huh.
And you say so on the air.
Right.
Would the FCC say, feel free to kick him in the c***? Or would the FCC say, don't kick him in the c***, stick your foot up his ass?
Okay. Oh, wow. Well, based on the last one, Kevin, I think maybe 2 in this case. What do you think?
Right. 2.
No, kick him in the c***.
Okay. Oh, really?
It makes for a more challenging punishment. His c*** is so small, it's hard to reach.
That's true.
If you kick him in the c***, give yourself an extra 100 points on this test. And thank you for taking the FCC Indecency Regulation Training Program.
Fantastic. Oh,
thank God that's over with. Ralph's got the showbiz beat. Good morning, Ralph.
Have you been following this story about how Elizabeth Hurley's new father-in-law just hates her.
No.
No.
Yeah. Has disowned her and her son and his son.
Why? What's the...
Because of their wedding.
What happened?
Well, he's a very strict Hindu.
Yeah.
And they sort of half-assed the wedding ceremony.
Okay.
And he believes that he was insulted.
Oh.
And disserviced by how they treated him at the wedding and how they treated other family members in exchange for Elizabeth Hurley's Hollywood friends and for her getting a certain amount of attention. He's disgusted by the whole situation and has publicly denounced them and said he's pretty much disinheriting his son.
Oh, my gosh.
And this was the absurd, like, three-day wedding, too, right, Ralph?
Yes.
Well, that's right. They did it forever.
Well, it turns out that Elizabeth Hurley and Aaron Nayar didn't just tick off the in-laws. It may be a crime.
What?
Here's my favorite story ever. E! Online reports that Vishnu Khandelwala, Khandelwal, he's a Hindu Indian citizen who is so enraged about what went on during the couple's wedding that he's decided to take it to court. Now, here's the real deal. India considers outraging another group's religion with deliberate and malicious intention a serious crime, punishable up to 3 years in jail.
Okay.
Now, during the ceremony, apparently they committed several religious no-nos, such as the bride dressing provocatively, and she was wearing leather, which you can't do because you know they love their cows over there.
Do they know how hot she is?
And the two were kissing in front of a sacred fire, which is also not allowed. So this guy is saying they intentionally and maliciously outraged the Hindu religion by...
So he has to prove that they said to each other, let's make everyone mad by kissing right here. This will do it.
Or if by just by ignoring the tenets of the religion and just say we're going to do what we want and disrespecting it in such a way, it could possibly be considered a crime in India.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess one of the things, Kevin, was that she kept her shoes on during the ceremony, which is a violation of
you
how the Hindus like to do it. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable.
Must show your feet, my friend.
We take the freedom of expression and freedom of religion, you know, maybe for granted in this country. When you hear a story like this, you realize how different it is in other parts of the world where you really can, I mean, literally go to jail for something like this.
Jail for having your shoes on.
During your wedding. Yeah.
And wearing leather.
What the hell?
And kissing in front of the sacred fire.
Well, I would.
These girls, man, they're getting on my neck.
Yeah, that's an Indian right there. Look for Brad and Angelina to take to the seas with their 27 adopted children.
Yeah.
According to the London Sun tabloid, the couple has recently purchased a $138 million yacht.
What? How do you spend that much on a boat?
Well, they had it built.
$138 million?
Apparently, the home boasts three decks, is 240 feet long, has six bedrooms, an outdoor pool, a helicopter pad, and a gym.
Oh, wow.
Helicopter pad on a boat.
I know the both of them make a lot of money, but that's...
That's stupid money.
Stupid money.
Yeah. That's seriously FU money right there.
Wow.
So they might never have to live anywhere again. They can just sail around the world all the time.
That's going
to
sit in a dock someplace for months at a time.
Maybe we could have a singles party on.
There you go.
Let's give them a call and see if they'll rent it out to us.
Hey, they ought to be careful, man. The way you described that boat, they could get deployed to Iraq. Sounds like they could be a real use there.
It's better equipment than the guys over there have, I'll tell you that much. Snoop Dogg pleaded no contest yesterday to felony drug and gun charges. He took 5 years probation and 800 hours of community service.
That's a lot of community service.
Well, beats a lengthy prison sentence, which is what he could have gotten.
Beat and I did 130 hours of community service, and it took us like 2 years.
Oh, my God.
Snoop didn't say much more in the courtroom other than no contest, according to the LA Times. This all goes back to Snoop's running with the cops at Burbank's Bob Hope Airport back on October 26 when he was arrested on suspicion of transporting marijuana. And later that day, police found a gun at Snoop's home. Here's the beautiful part for me. Snoop's lawyer presented a doctor's note that under current California law would still allow Snoop to smoke out.
He gets medical marijuana?
Yeah, because his doctor says he's got migraines, and they use the marijuana to help manage the migraines.
Oh, that's what it is.
I say let him have it. I say he deserves it.
That's the best.
Even on probation, he would still be allowed to smoke because of the Medical Marijuana Act.
I thought the federal law was fighting the local law on that, and the federal law could still arrest him or whatever.
If he goes anywhere else other than California, he would be popped, that's for sure.
That's awesome.
You want to know what awesome is? Rolling Stone magazine has just published their list of the 25
undisputed guiltiest pleasure bands.
Oh, no.
These are bands that you listen to in the car when no one else is around and you just sneak it. It all started apparently on RollingStone.com when someone was mentioning that in the summertime they love to play Rush at top volume in their car.
Okay.
And so it started a conversation of what are your top 25 guilty pleasure bands? And they just released the list, and it's spectacular. All my favorite bands are on this list, by the way. You know me.
Of course.
If I hear the word Asia, Ralph, I'm going to get up and leave. I'm sorry.
Asia actually isn't in the top 25, which I think is
because no one
because
listens
they're
to
not
it.
A guilty pleasure because they're an accepted band of genius.
Everyone thinks they're dead.
And it's no point even putting them in guilty pleasures because they are not. They are an innocent pleasure.
Everybody thinks they're dead.
Here's the top 10 guilty pleasure bands of all time, okay? Number 10.
Okay.
New Edition. You don't tell your friends you're listening to New Edition,
no,
apparently.
Ever.
But people still do?
Yeah.
But if you heard Cool It Now today on the radio, you'd like it.
No.
Bon Jovi, number 9.
Oh, I see that.
Yeah. Bread, number 8.
If a picture paints a thousand words, then why can't I paint you?
People still listen to that?
God, I hope not. Apparently, according to this list, they do. Number 7, Foreigner. Yeah, come on, Foreigner.
Yeah.
Hey, Television.
There wouldn't be a Jack FM if it weren't for Foreigner, let's be honest.
Foreigner. Nor number 6, Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Along with the city name bands, number 5, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Guilty pleasure. Number 4, ABBA. I didn't know how they showed up eventually.
Sure.
3, Journey.
Well, they're just all old bands.
That's why you don't tell anyone you listen to them, right? Because they're guilty pleasures. Are you missing the point of the list, Kevin?
I thought there might be some current bands on
this. ELO is number 2. And number 1 is Rush, as I mentioned. Other bands that didn't break the top 10 but are still in the top 25. Motley Crue is 12 on the list.
Yeah.
Kelly Clarkson, 16 on the list.
Okay.
Wham, 18 on the list.
No one listens to Wham anymore.
Poison, number 20 on the list. Lionel Richie, 21st on the list. Air Supply, 23rd on the list. Britney Spears, 25th on the list. So.
What about?
Who let the dogs out?
What about that one?
I don't think the Baja Man made it.
Not on the list. No one listening.
There's no CD to play there. He's just got the single you'd have to play over and over and over again.
Just check.
And in a fitting tribute, the last film that Anna Nicole Smith ever made, Illegal Aliens, is set to make its debut at the Cannes Film Festival. Then we'll be out on DVD by May 1st. The sci-fi comedy also stars former Dynasty star John James and former wrestler Joni China Lauer.
Oh, good Lord.
I want to see this more than life itself.
Did you guys see Jimmy Kimmel's show last night?
No, sir.
I did
not. He showed a clip of this movie, and I immediately wrote it off as he had to have doctored that somehow. It was so unbelievably bad. But now that you bring that up, I didn't even realize it was a real story. I thought, no, where did he get that footage? Maybe it was some of that stuff that Howard K. Stern was shooting or something. She's so clown-like.
The handheld video camera?
I'm telling you, you would look at that and go, no way.
That's funny.
Well, she's a terrible actress. But did you say it's going to be in a film festival? Which one can?
Yes, Cannes Film Festival.
How is that? Why would they accept that to be shown?
Here's the thing. People think the Cannes Film Festival is just all high and mighty movies, but it's an international marketplace for film. They sell all kinds of crap there all week long. It's only the high-end stuff that gets the Palme d'Or, the awards, and that kind of stuff. And they do more, you know, high-end screenings of films. But they're selling all kinds of crap there all year long.
I thought it had to be, like, a certain amount of good just to get in.
No, it's a film festival. Okay. They take a lot of entries. And then, of course, they whittle them down and then give the awards to the best stuff.
The lucky people who will see this will laugh their asses off.
And, by the way, you've already pre-ordered it on Amazon after seeing the clip last night. I'm sure. Is it Fat Anna or Skinny Anna?
Oh, it's fat, clown-like Anna.
I guess it's got to be Fat Anna, yeah.
Okay.
It's Clowny Anna.
Then that's going to be great.
Yeah. Clowny Anna. That's a Disney film, isn't it? Clowny Anna. Are you all right, Mike? You okay? You got that in? You happy now?
That wasn't me, dude.
That wasn't him, although he had queued it up.
Today's celebrity birthday is Ed O'Neill, married with children, 61 years old today. David Letterman turns 60. He's got like a 3-year-old son and he's 60 years old.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
David Cassidy, speaking of guilty pleasure bands, he's 57 years old today. Andy Garcia turns 51. Art Alexakis from Everclear is 45 years old today. Nick Hexum from 311 turns 37. Nicholas Brendan played Xander on Buffy. He's 36. Shannon Doherty's 36 as well. Guy Berryman, bassist for Coldplay, turns 29. And Claire Danes is 28 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Okay, so that's over. It's the Kevin and Bean Show on the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ.
If only there were a way, if only there were a timer, some sort of a countdown so we'd know when the song's in.
That was every time. There's no timer.
I know. It's not possible. That technology doesn't exist. Right. Quentin Tarantino on the show today, and from your Anaheim Ducks. He is 6'6" of raw fury. Chris Pronger is going to be joining us in the 9 o'clock hour here this morning on the World Famous K-Rock. First, though, I can't wait for this. We've been looking forward to this update. The Kevin, describe how we got in touch with the so-called Craig.
Well, Craig emailed us and said that he was going on a whole weekend at a swingers club in the Bahamas, was it? And that
it was a week, and it was in Mexico.
Yes, in Mexico. In Cancun. And that his girlfriend had dropped him, so he needed a partner to go with on this vacation.
Right.
So we welcome Craig back to the air. Good morning, Craig.
Hey,
Craig, welcome back, man. Glad you survived the trip. So we went on the air with your sad tale of woe, and some ladies called in, and you selected one of them, who I believe is also on the line. Let's say good morning to, we'll call her Lola. Hey, Lola, welcome back to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey.
Now, the last time we heard from you, happy kids, you were actually at the airport. It was a week ago Monday. You were at LAX getting ready to board the plane. And, Craig, if I remember talking to you at the time, you were at that point very impressed with Lola and really looking forward to the week, right?
Very impressed, and we were already about three margaritas into the morning, so we were having a good time already.
Yeah, we could tell by your voices that you are already drinking, and that was good.
Well, who wants to start with the recap of how the week went?
I'll start off. It was spectacular, spectacular. We got to the resort. It's a gorgeous place right on the ocean in Playa del Carmen, south of Cancun, and you know, Lola got started a little slow, you know, meeting people, but it's a great place. But by the end of the week...
Now, wait a minute. What do you mean by Lola got started slow?
Yeah.
You know, when you first go to a place like that and everybody's walking around naked, you kind of... You're kind of looking, and then by the second or third day, you know, you're fine and you're right in the middle of it. And she was like Tracy Lords at a bachelor party by the end of the week.
Wow. A lot of fat guys, a lot of old guys, Lola?
Hot.
I mean, there's all kinds, right?
Hot. How about that?
There
okay.
There were some hot people, yeah.
Now, had you ever been to a swingers place, Lola?
No, I was in shock.
Really? Like, you were in shock?
I was the weird one in a bathing suit for the first few days.
Yeah.
About 45 minutes.
Yeah. Then I had to get rid of that tan line fast.
Well, you have to do what you have to do, right?
Now, you were in shock because something so depraved was going on, or you were in shock because something so amazing and wonderful was going on that you didn't know about up until last week?
I would say the latter, yeah. I mean, it really was like serious couples who were out to be very committed to each other, but also open themselves up. It was a mind blow because it wasn't sleazy. It was very like Pottery Barn, Sky Bar, beautiful. Beautiful.
Right. Really?
And the people were so amazing and open and fun. And I was shut down. I was scared.
I imagine. Was there anybody else like you, which was, you know, a couple going on a date, or were you the only ones? It was basically committed people.
We were the only ones.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it was a crash course in getting to know Craig.
Sure, yeah.
He was so polite. He was so kind. It was really, I felt so lucky.
That's a huge surprise to us.
Because we had him pegged to the exact opposite, I'll tell you, Lola. Now, Lola, you, I fell in love with you very deeply, as many of our listeners did when we first had you on the air, because you had such a carefree attitude. You knew it was going to be a blast. You were going to make sure that it was fun. I mean, it was really the way you approached it. It's almost like you couldn't help but have a good time, because that seems to be the kind of person that you are. But you had to be a little nervous when you first got ready to meet Craig for the first time. You had to think, man, what am I getting myself into? I'm going away to a foreign country for a week with a guy I've never met before, essentially. What were your first impressions when you first hooked up with him?
I think it hit me when I was there the first day. I think I I jumped right in.
Yeah.
My first impression was that he was really kind and he wasn't going to pressure me, and that it was going to be just really, I was going to be myself and make my own choices. And that was the way it was. It was the whole environment. And
did you do a walk by first? Did you walk by the gate, have a glance, make sure that he wasn't like, you know, Rodney Dangerfield with the bloodshot eyes and, you know, already drunk and just keep on walking? Or did you walk right up to him?
Well, he picked me up. We went to lunch, and then he went out and met my friends and family. So I did screen him a little
bit. Wow.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, now people are going to want to know a bunch of questions about how the week went. Was there a love connection between you two at all, even if it was only for the week?
Craig, you talk.
We're going to be, we will be very good friends forever. I'm not sure that we're relationship material, but which is fine. You know, okay. we we kind of both hit it off. We both have a lot in common. We're both writers, and we both, you know, love music and everything. But, I mean, she's just an awesome person.
Let me pinpoint that.
We sang a lot in the shower.
I'm sorry?
Say
that again. You sang in the shower together? Let me pinpoint Bean's question a little bit more, because we don't care about your future. last week, did you have sex with each other?
Yes, we actually.
Nice.
I'm the only one applauding, but we all feel it. So you hit that. Now, how about, let's get a body count for the rest of the week, too. Lola, was Craig the only one you had sex with in Mexico, or were there more?
Well, that Dutch couple was pretty fun.
Dutch couple?
We met a couple from Holland, and he was 6'5", and let's just say that he was anatomically
over. Listen to Lola. Oh.
So you had sex with him, and Lola had sex with her.
I had sex with her, too.
Yeah.
Oh, God bless you.
This might be the best story ever.
Yeah. I was really into her.
So was 4 the biggest number that had sex together at any point in the week, or was there more?
Oh, my God.
We didn't really participate, but we watched a few multi-couple things where there were maybe, you know, 6 to 8 to 10 people, and everybody was happy, and we were happy, and we were drinking margaritas and enjoying the warm ocean breeze.
One day it was like 15 drinks, I can count.
Wow. You know, Craig knows...
back of the disco.
There was what? Say that again?
Playroom, quote unquote.
Oh, I see. Playroom, no kidding.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
It was intense.
Craig knows how to show a woman a good time on a first date, doesn't he?
Yeah, no kidding.
Holy.
Now, are you going to stay in touch with any of the other couples that were there?
Absolutely. I made international friends. I mean, they really showed me how to be, you know, they all had families, they were married, they had all had tattoos of their kids, and they were just serious, fun people and serious-minded people. It was really exciting.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We actually walked down the beach to a couple other resorts close by that were, you know, very high and upscale.
Right.
But not clothing optional or whatever. And we walked through the pool area, and everyone was real snooty. No one was talking to each other. There was no, you know, conversation. And then back in our place, everybody's laughing and having a good time.
Yeah.
So it was really a great time.
Lola, were you walking funny by the end of the week?
Yeah, and that wasn't the jellyfish either.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Well, it sounds to me like, with the exception of the fact that you're not now deeply in love and planning a wedding, it sounds to me like it went about as well as it reasonably could have been expected, considering the last-minute nature of hooking you two kids up.
I think actually better, because if I'd known anything, I would have been thinking too much.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
You would have not wanted to do
it. It could have gone way, way worse, and it was completely opposite. It was brilliant.
How about that?
Oh, my gosh.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Well, there was very little chance. Very little chance that it was going to be this successful. I got to tell you, we're very pleased to hear it, you kids.
We owe it all to you guys.
Yes,
yeah,
you do.
Believe me, you have a whole bunch of new listeners.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. The Holland couple, the Dutch couple?
The New York couple, the Jersey couple, the Czech couple.
Well, now. All right. You guys got busy. Good work.
Oh, yeah.
Nice job, Craig.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lola.
Oh, thank you.
All right, bye now.
Oh, my God.
Listen to her.
Oh, my God.
She still enjoyed it.
Woo!
Give me a little germs here, Kevin, while I tell people what we're about to talk about here. One of the seminal punk bands of all time, based right here in good old Southern California. I'm sure Rodney Bingenheimer saw a few shows back in the day. The Germs are back in the news. Here's the headline from yesterday's Los Angeles Times. Punk rocker caught in soap opera. Was a legendary punk rocker arrested for possession of soap? That's the question surrounding last week's jailing of Germs drummer Don Bowles after a traffic stop in Newport Beach. We got a bunch of emails from people who said, you guys have got to find out what the story. This can't be true. So we thought we'll go right to the source. And we got Don Bowles on the line with us right now for the first time on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Don, thanks for joining us, man.
Good morning, and thank you.
Well, we're happy to have you on, man. So it was last Wednesday, you're in Newport, you're driving around in your crappy van, and what happened then?
Well, I was pulled over by the Newport Beach police, allegedly because of a brake light that was malfunctioning.
Right.
And I won't get into any details, but there was a search, and they found my toiletry kit with, like, a razor and some denture glue and, like, a toothbrush and a bottle of Dr. Bronner's Magic Soap.
Okay, now,
peppermint flavored.
Now this is shampoo.
No, it's soap.
Soap, okay.
Well, it's also shampoo. I use it for all my bathing needs that I have for about 35 years.
Now, here's my question. Here's the part that I don't understand at all. If the police pull you over, even if they ask to search your car and you say okay, and they find shampoo...
Well, it's soap, but I'm...
Soap, okay, I'm sorry. And they find soap. Yeah. Why would they test...
soap.
Fine. Why would they test the ingredients?
It's beyond me. That's bizarre.
Why did they do that, Don?
As much of a student of human behavior and psychology as I tend to be in my spare time and at home, I still don't understand how the thought processes work.
What did they say to you when they made the decision? When the police officer made the decision that he was going to pull the soap out of your van and take it to the lab?
Asked me what this bottle of liquid was that was in my my van purse, and so I told him, "Well, it's Dr. Bronner's liquid soap," and then I went on to extol its virtues, still thinking that this was a friendly conversation we were having.
Right.
I've been using this soap for 35 years. It's great soap. You know, it gives me the complexion of a 15-year-old, and
it's made with coconut olive hemp.
They weren't really impressed, and they said, "Yeah." So it's soap, huh? That's what, you know, then I said, yeah, it's soap.
Now,
so that was my last word on it. And they said, well, no, this is not soap. It's GHB, and you're under arrest for possession of a controlled substance.
GHB is the date rape drug.
I know. Well, you know, I used to think I was pretty hip until I had to have a police officer explain to me what a recreational drug was and did.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine anyone in the gerbs hasn't identified every drug personally in the course of the last 40 years. But so they do a field test at the scene, and then they come to you and say, hey, you got the date rape drug in your soap? Is that what they said?
I'm not really sure if what they meant was it was the soap or was in the soap, but either way, it's I've been given to understand it's probably pretty absurd. Apparently you wouldn't want to put this drug in a soap base because, well, I guess you have to drink it for it to do anything.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
Hey,
right.
Wash with this, young lady.
Well,
that's ridiculous. Right now, but
sounds abstract.
But let me go back to when they pulled you over and they looked at it. They said to you, "This has GHB in it," or
not until
they tested
it first, you know. But they were suspicious of what this orange liquid in the bottle that said Dr. Bronner's soap might be.
Do you think that they were suspicious based on the look of you?
Well, maybe. I was wearing a giant fur, like, Russian Hasidic hat, and I had, like, fairly long hair. I am the only punk rocker with long hair since time immemorial.
Right, sure.
And you're driving around in a 1968 van in Newport, right?
Yeah, it's a nice van, too. It's a Dodge A1.
I'm sure it is. This is Don Bowles on the line, by the way, who is the drummer for the punk band The Germs, who are, I would say this is fair, they're probably most famous for Pat Smear being in the group, who went on to such fame, right, afterwards?
Probably one of the most famous and the least played of all punk bands.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so the people who make the soap, they came out, the Dr. Bronner's people came out and said, yeah, you know, we've run into trouble with our soap in the past because of the hemp ingredient, because it will test positive for THC, but they don't have any explanation or understanding as to why GHB could be found in it as well. They say that is in no way an ingredient of the soap, right?
Correct.
Okay. You spent three and a half days in jail in Orange County after this arrest?
Well, yeah, I guess objectively it was 3.5 days, although, you know, it seemed like 3 3/4.
Okay. 3 3/4.
Okay. All right, so where are we now? Because it sounds to me like, if they do another test back at the lab, something that's that's a little better than the field test, if it turns out there's no GHB in it, it sounds to me like you're free to walk. There's no hassle, no problem, right?
Well, that's what logic might suggest, yes.
But
we're not really sure what kind of a role that this sort of logic business plays in a case such as this. So I guess we're going to find out. I have a preliminary hearing, I think, on my hopefully lucky day, which is Friday the 13th in Harbor City Court. And that's
okay.
About
oh, okay.
All I know.
Now, Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps, again, Vice President and the President say they're going to pay for your lawyers.
Yeah, my lawyer is Bruce Margolin, who's, I guess, a pretty famous lawyer. He's sort of active in a lot of the drug reform,
okay,
et cetera. And Dr. Bronner is no longer with us, the guy who wrote all those fascinatingly informative labels that, you would often find on the Dr. Bronner soap products. He's no longer with us, but I did get to meet David Bronner, his grandson.
Right.
Great guy. And, by the way, I got to hang out with... It was a great moment. I was hanging around with a guy who makes my favorite soap that I've used for years and whiled away many hours reading the labels. And I got to hang out with him and Angeline and have a cup of coffee.
Oh, wow. My God. How is Angeline still alive, Don?
Well,
seriously.
I don't know if... I wouldn't go that far. But
she's not alive.
Yeah, exactly.
But all right.
Well, listen.
Bean and Tea Leaf on Sunset Boulevard.
We don't have much time here, Don. We were interested in the story because it seems so outrageous, but I still have the feeling there's something you're not telling us. Are you sure you didn't, like, already, there wasn't already a warrant out for your arrest or something like that, and that's why they arrest you? Because it just seems so unlikely the way you've described this story.
Believe it or not, my record is clean.
Record is clean. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't have warrants or all that stuff.
Okay. The reason Bean says that is we see a lot of stories that come through, and very seldom is it this cut and dry, this black and white, where it's crazy and the police are dead. I'm not saying it's not in this case.
It seems to resonate with a lot of people.
Of course.
This is actually in Pravda, too. It's the first time that I've actually been in Pravda.
Right, he's talking about being written up in the Russian newspaper, too. Right?
Right, sure.
Yeah, first time on our show, yeah. Right. All right, so you want this to, obviously, you're hoping you'll walk in there tomorrow and they'll basically say, our mistake, have a great day, Mr. Bowles, you're free to go. And then you go back to doing the Germs tour and the whole deal that you got planned for the summer.
Yeah, we have a huge tour planned for the summer, right, with a big show in England and stuff. And, you know, the people in Europe don't really take too kindly to felonious date rapers and such
sure.
Coming over to their place.
I don't think anyone does, really.
Let me ask you two quick things, Don, before you go, because we may not have the opportunity to talk to you again. Number one is true story that you guys made a movie about the Germs and the actors. Somebody made a movie, right?
All we did was be the Germs, but however, somebody else did come along and make this movie, and they wrapped it up a couple of times now, and we played the rap parties with the guy who is playing Darby Crash in the movie as our singer.
That's what's amazing to me is
no longer with us.
Right. The actor who played your lead singer, who died very young, is the guy that now is singing with the Germs, which has got to be like the first time that's ever happened. That's amazing. And the last question I have for you is, are you stunned as we are that Rodney Bingenheimer is still alive?
Well, not after talking to him the other day, no. No, it's true. He is.
All right.
So okay.
He's been validated.
I'm
excellent.
Glad he got his scar finally. That guy, I mean.
As are we.
That guy witched that up from somewhere. That's amazing. Finally, Rodney gets something.
Hey, I'm sure he was playing the Germs on this radio station back in 1977, wasn't he?
And he name-checked us and my other band, 45 Grave, during his three-minute speech at the Walk of Fame.
Nice.
He got his star, so yeah.
Fantastic. Hey, well, listen, we're going to keep our eyes peeled and see what happens with the story. But as I said, when we brought you on, we did just want to kind of hear it right from the dude that it happened to. So good luck in court tomorrow, man. I hope everything works out for you.
Thanks. So do I. I'm as mystified as everybody else.
Wow. All right. Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
That's right, bitch. Make it or break it for your Clippers. Tonight.
A little smack talking between you and the King of Mexico going on right now.
Yep. Bitch. Tonight.
Dave doesn't seem to be the tiniest bit worried that his Clippers, after all the talk all season long, may not actually even make the playoffs.
Look. They're just doing that to bring excitement to the game, because, you know.
Oh, I see. So they're doing that
on purpose.
That's what teams like to do. So they're not talking to the gold side.
Yeah, hey, I don't know who turned it all around.
Yeah. It was Jay Moore. He couldn't figure that out.
Yeah.
For the life of him yesterday. So you're not worried at all?
Not worried at all. They're going to win tonight. They're going to win the rest of the... They're going to win the next five games.
Oh, so they're going to beat Phoenix and they're going to beat everyone?
They're going to be the seventh seed. How about that?
Seventh seed. You want to put money on it right now?
That they're going to be the seventh seed?
Yes.
Sure.
Any amount.
Not any amount.
Any small amount, whatever you want.
$20. $20 credits.
Seventh seed.
How about a wager? And of course, we're not talking about actual cash because that would be illegal and wrong,
yes,
and morally indefensible. But how about a little side bet on just tonight's game? Because it seems to me Lakers Clippers. Who knew at the time the schedule was released that this game was going to mean so much to both clubs?
The NBA, they knew.
What do you want, bitch?
What do you want
tonight?
I came up with the seventh seed.
Okay, $20 on tonight.
Sure,
fantastic.
These are no fun.
Like taking candy from a baby.
You know, it would be your money coming back to you anyways from the rest of the season.
Oh, shut up. All right.
Dave, we heard talk that there was going to be some sort of a Clippers playoff song. You were going to do a sequel to your very popular Clippers song from earlier in the season.
Well, it better come soon here because the Clippers may be done this weekend.
See, that's how confident I am. I'm making a playoff song because I know they're going to be in it.
Okay, save that tape.
Good luck with that.
Time for the Afro line, 323-520. Afros, the phone number. Oddly enough, Dave, the King of Mexico, our first Afro call.
Oh.
Any topic is fine. Usually Dave can just step in here and talk to us, but this time he felt like calling.
What up, Kevin and Bean? It's Dave, the King of Mexico. Dude, it's only 17 days, 13 hours, 20 minutes, 10 seconds till Rage Against the Machine hits the stage. Bitch, Kevin, don't mess this up, or I will kill you.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that one. We were talking about deal breakers. We were talking about especially small deal breakers because those cracked us up. Although, this guy I think we would all be with.
Hey, Kevin, hey, Bean. You guys were talking a couple weeks back about deal breakers. Well, I got a deal breaker for you. Anal fro, dude. Women are not supposed to have an anal fro.
Oh.
Total deal breaker, dude. Total deal breaker.
I think that's legit. I think we're going to say okay. We'll give him a pass on that.
Anal fro, by the way, opening up Coachella.
That's what I hear. They're very good.
Here's the crazy dude that's been talking about Psycho Mike the last couple days.
Oh, that's...
He's out of his mind, I think.
Hey, Psycho Mike, I have to apologize because I guess you deleted my girl from my site. Now she only has like 6,015. Actually, no, I'm not sorry. Anyways, advise you not to kiss your mama's lips. Last night she's a dirty little girl.
I don't... What? What's... I don't get it.
Haven't
I don't even know what he's talking about.
I don't either. Muse concert happened a couple nights ago?
Yeah, so I go to the Muse concert last night, dude, and pure fat chicks went there. Yeah, fat chicks. Fat chicks. Ugh.
Fat chicks can't like the Muse? Is that what he's saying?
Kevin and Bean love continues.
Kevin and Bean are a bunch of nappy-headed hoes. That's right.
Oh, how are you going to come at us like that?
I was on TV last night. Mm-hmm. Anti-Defamation League dinner.
Hey, Kevin. I saw you on TV on the ADO, whatever the hell that means. You look pretty damn sexy. Freaking nappy-headed hoe.
I just seen you on news. That was lame.
Yeah, an abnormally large head with freakishly blonde hair just filled up my TV on Fox News. I don't know who I can blame for that. Kevin.
Kevin? ADL? Oil? Water? Apples? Oranges.
That's an excellent point that you, just on principle, should not have been allowed into the Anti-Defamation League dinner last night.
I know. I thought they were going to bounce me at the door.
Yeah, they should have.
But they didn't. You know, we have the Download Rodeo now at krock.com. You can go to the website. You can download a bunch of audio from us. And you can play tricks with it if you'd like, I guess.
Hey, Kevin, I never got your fish out of water thing you were trying to say the other day or a while back. But if you slow it down really closely and act like you're drunk, I think we'd all understand. Listen.
It's like you take a, you catch a fish in a lake and you put it out on the ground and just like flops around on the ground completely. It's like a fish out of water is what it's like.
That is awesome. Fantastic.
Wasn't a great setup.
To all of your clips.
Wasn't a great setup, but a good clip.
It was a great clip.
I love that.
Then the guy calls back.
I just love peanut butter and would like people to be that I can talk to peanut about with peanut butter.
Yes.
323-520 Afro is the phone number 24 hours a day.
Oh, not what that song means?
Not the dreaded double clap.
It's the Kevin Bean Show on K-Rock.
Music right there.
It is, right.
106.7 KROQ at 7:56 Thursday morning. By the way, Robert Rodriguez joins us tomorrow morning in the 7 o'clock hour talking about his half of Grindhouse. And Quentin Tarantino joins us next hour here on the Kevin Bean Show on K-Rock to talk about his part of the movie. So
hey,
that's
to my little movie.
That's all coming up. Here's Ralph with the Showbiz Bee. Good morning, Ralph.
Oh, Haley Scarnato.
I'm going to miss her.
I miss her and her 7-foot long legs sticking out of those little short shorts she'd wear every week.
Is this American Idol?
American Idol, Kevin.
Yeah.
See how much weight she lost since she's been on that show, by the way, Ralph?
That's the American Idol diet. They all go through that.
No kidding.
I mean, not all. Not Laquita.
When they do a film retrospective of the journey, Kevin, as they say goodbye to somebody, and I swear she's lost 20 pounds since she's been on that show, it looked like.
Catherine went through the same thing.
So she goes fat, yeah. fat, thin, 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 thinner? Yeah. That's how it does?
Yeah, well, not fat, yeah. but just like normal, thin, thin, okay. thin, right. thin, 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 thinner.
She was hot. I saw a little clip of that. She's a hot chick. Why didn't they vote her in?
Because here's my theory. I was saying this last night. I think American Idol is largely run by prepubescent girls.
Sure.
That's who sits there for hours on hours dialing and dialing and dialing and dialing.
Sure.
And I think they look at a hot chick like her and go, oh, she thinks she's all that. Because she's wearing those shorts. I hate her. And they all get bitchy about it, and they don't vote for her. But they go, oh, Sanjay is so cute. Isn't he cute? Look at his smile. Look at his hair. And then they vote for him. That's the mentality of this show. That's what's going on across America.
Yes, it is. Hmm.
Interesting. Well, there have been, I mean, there have been 5 shows and 3 female winners so far. So a girl can win, but you're saying not if she tries to sex it up.
Not if she's hot.
Interesting.
Even Catherine only made it to number 2. They wouldn't give her, they wouldn't push her over the top. They went for Gray Hair McOldstard.
Sure.
Who's just tearing up the charts with his hot CD. You know, everybody's pissed off because he is the idol.
Right.
And they've got the song at the end they play when they boot somebody off, the sad song when they send him home.
Where they have to sing it, you mean?
No, they play a song during the retrospective, during the clip package. They'll play like a sappy song underneath.
Right.
And they're using a Chris Daughtry song from his new CD. And I was like, aren't you not giving any love to your idol? Shouldn't you put some of his music on there? Like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever
with
him.
Whatever with that. It's not so good. Ah, Whitney Houston has kicked her boyfriend Ray J out of her life.
Oh,
according to In Touch magazine, she threw him out over the sex tape he made with his ex-girlfriend Kim Kardashian. Superstar Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
Initially, Whitney said it didn't bother her, but now that it's sold over 300,000 copies.
Wow.
I guess she's not comfortable with that. Many people seeing her man put it to another chick.
He made that
younger
before,
and hotter than she is.
Before he met her, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But she's still not too happy with that.
About that.
She's a new woman. She's not taking any crap from no man no more.
Uh-uh.
Hell to the yeah. That's what I gotta say.
That's your Whitney Houston impression?
Yeah, how's it sound?
Very good.
Things gone from bad to worse for Girls Gone Wild creator Joe Francis. He got popped at an airport earlier this week because a judge had put out a warrant for his arrest. Now, thesmokinggun.com tells us Joe Francis was indicted on a federal tax evasion charge this week.
Uh-oh.
For illegally deducting more than $20 million in phony business expenses.
Oh, my God.
Guilty, 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 guilty!
Wait a minute. In 1 year? Or just over the years?
I have a $5 million stapler.
$20 million?
From his 2002 and 2003 corporate tax returns.
He didn't think that would be a red flag?
I got $20 million in FedEx and Kinko's expenses.
Wow.
You make a lot of copies.
Yeah.
Maybe he just tried to deduct every traveling expense, and he lived extravagantly, maybe, and everywhere he went, he was looking for boobs. Who knows? Maybe that's...
Two-count indictment was filed in Reno, Nevada, and says that he tried to hide income using offshore companies and other bogus setups, as well as the deductions.
Ooh.
At one point, he transferred $15 million from an offshore bank account to a California brokerage account in the name of a Cayman Islands corporation he controlled and invented.
Oh.
Huh. It seems like some dodgy accounting going on here, basically.
But incredibly common. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of people who do that same thing. He just got
don't
caught.
Get caught. That's the key. If convicted, he faces a maximum of 10 years in prison and fines of up to $500,000. That's the video I want to buy is when he's in prison.
Prisoners gone wild.
Want to see my boobies, Joe Francis? I'll go wild for you.
My Whitney Houston impression again. And Snoop Dogg pleaded no contest yesterday to felony drug and gun charges. He took 5 years probation in the deal and 800 hours of community service. But it's better than what could have been a lengthy prison sentence, so he got the better end of the deal. LA Times reports that Snoop didn't say much in the courtroom other than no contest when asked how he pleaded. And is it pled or pleaded?
Pleaded,
right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. This goes back to Snoop's running with the cops at the Bob Hope Airport in Burbank, and he was arrested on suspicion of transporting marijuana. Can't you just stop him any day of the week, pretty much, and get him on that charge?
Sure.
And later that day, police found a gun at Snoop's home as well. My favorite part of the trial, and I'm not kidding, was that his lawyer produced a letter from his doctor saying that he suffered from migraines, and so under the California state law, he can still legally smoke pot to help control the pain of his migraines. So even if he goes on probation, if he follows the rules, he can still smoke up.
That's the best.
Which is good. Remember when he told us he quit for a while?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's good times.
Yeah.
But I think we add him to the Kevin Amin list of people who have exceptions. You know, put him up there with Willie Nelson. You know, Snoop should be allowed.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people say, oh, we don't need different rules. Yeah, we do. For certain people, he should be able to smoke.
He deserves
Let's
it.
Be honest.
He's earned it. Sakes.
He's no threat.
No.
Yeah.
Heard you guys talking to Germs, drummer.
Yeah.
You mentioned Rodney. I got this email I wanted to bring up real quick.
By the way, that guy loved his soap.
Yeah.
Sure did. Nobody loved his soap more than that guy.
The complexion of a 15-year-old. So I'm going to get some of that soap. Dear Ralph, I've been a long-time listener. I listen to you guys every morning on the way to work, and as well as now at work, thanks to web streaming via the internet. I heard you talk about Rodney on the Rock after his star presentation on the Walk of Fame. I heard you talk about him again today with the drummer from the Germs. So I've heard Rodney before, and I pictured him as kind of a heavy-set, tanned individual.
No?
Not the most desirable person on the planet, but certainly fine to look at. I decided to Google him and take a picture.
Don't take a look of his picture. Don't do that.
Now, keep in mind, it's the first time I've ever seen Rodney, and when I saw him, I thought you guys were kidding about the burial. It's certainly come to my attention that Rodney's kind of heinous. That's from Adam at Marketing Holdings. I want to thank Adam for sending that in. Well done, Adam.
Kind of heinous. Oh, kind of heinous.
Rodney's kind of heinous.
I couldn't understand a word of it.
No.
You sang like a 14-year-old, and I'm going to hate myself for this. It wasn't horrible.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Simon. See, he's kind of heinous.
Yeah.
Magic. I love our listeners.
That was good.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
Hey, y'all, this is Quentin Tarantino.
Ezekiel 25:17.
Mr. Blonde, Mr. Blue, Mr. Orange, Mr. Pink.
Why am I Mr. Pink?
Because you're a fat, all right?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Bang, bang, my baby shot me down.
You didn't think it was going to be that easy, did you? No. For a second there? Yeah, I kind of did.
Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof.
This car is 100% death-proof. Only to get the benefit of it, honey, you really need to be sitting in my seat.
Only at the Grindhouse.
Come on, people.
How about that? Ladies and gentlemen, Quentin Tarantino back on the world-famous K-Rock. Hey, Quentin, how are you, man?
Good to be back. I'm loving that little montage.
It's kind of cool, right? Played.
That was way cool.
Quentin, the first thing I thought when I sat down last Friday, and I was just like Kevin, man, I couldn't wait to go to the very first screening of Death Proof that I could make it to. I went to the 1 o'clock Friday afternoon screening. And when that guy comes on, that big voice announcer guy comes on to start talking about Machete, I thought, that guy is the coolest sounding guy in the world. Is that a guy who used to do trailers back in the day, or is he some new guy that you did an audition to find?
You know, I got to say, I actually have to ask Robert about that because that's Robert's trailer. Because the thing about it was when it first came on, he sounds exactly like Adolf Caesar. Do you remember that movie, Soldier Story?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it had the drill instructor that he was nominated for an Oscar and everything. Yeah. He was a bad guy in it. Anyway, before he did that movie, he was the guy that did all the trailers. And so I've been watching the Machete. Now, he's dead.
Right.
But I'm watching the Machete trailer, and I was like, yeah, that sounds like him. He's saying specific things. Maybe some of what Robert took, he took from that guy's voice from another trailer. But no, he's actually saying Machete stuff, so I don't know. But that guy, Robert got the best guy ever for that.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he's the best. He's the best guy ever in a trailer.
By the way, every single fake movie there, I want to see.
Good deal.
Every single one. I want to see Thanksgiving. I want to see Don't. I want to see them all.
You know, well, actually, Eli might very well make Thanksgiving.
Werewolves of the SS, I'm in.
Well, Rob Zombie pretty much shot
half of Werewolves of the SS just for the trailer.
Right.
So just 4 more days, he's got a feature.
For folks who don't know what we're talking about who haven't seen the movie, the vision that Quentin and his friend Robert Rodriguez had when they put together this double feature that's currently in theaters as Grindhouse is to recreate the experiences that you guys had growing up, going to movie theaters and seeing these exact kinds of films, and these trailers that we're talking about are just like the ones that they used to run for upcoming movies that were real. I mean, you've really managed to package an entire experience together. It's not just going to the movies when you go see Grindhouse, right? I mean, it takes you to an era that, you know, most of us are too young to have lived through, but now we feel like we were there.
Well, you know, that was completely the idea. It's like, it's a double feature, you know, one separate movie, Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror, my separate movie, Death Proof, with all this stuff in the middle. And the thing is, the movies have to work, all right? You should be able to take Planet Terror out, Death Proof out, play them separately, and they still work, and right. Then you get your money's worth. But you put them together, and you bracket it with the trailers, and then all the genuine intermission stuff
right.
That's actually in there.
Which is spectacular.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, we're creating almost like a Grindhouse ride. It is this whole experience, yeah, and it is. It's a whole night at the movies. You're having a night out. But you know what? You used to get that.
I know, double features.
When you go to the movies. Like, now it just seems like...
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it seems like you're just renting a seat. Yeah. And then right. When the movie's over, get up out of there, all right? Right? But before, like, you know, there was ballyhoo, big posters, lobby cards, you know, big signs that stretched 10 feet in the air over the marquee. It was a whole big stuff we went going on.
Do you
on.
Find yourself saying a lot to people? Do you remember when, and then they don't, and you get frustrated? Like, how much did you have to describe what Grindhouse mm-hmm. was? I had never heard of it yet.
Well, it's funny. It's like I guess I realized. I mean, actually, part of the thing that we were going into this was knowing that it's like, well, okay, like we're about two generations away from anybody who would actually have done this,
right? Right?
But that became part of the fun of it,
right?
Was actually, you know, taking a multiplex, a nice, shiny, sparkly multiplex, and turning it into a Grindhouse,
right?
And giving audiences that experience, and also you have a whole lot of. Kids and stuff that are like, you know, watching these movies on DVD and they're really finding them, and they're the ones reading Fangoria magazine and all that stuff.
Right.
And so, like, they heard about this experience forever, but they've, you know, just like when I was a kid and I had heard about Woodstock and heard about the 60s, well, I was too young for any of that.
Right.
Well, there's a whole lot of there's a lot of kids like that feel that way about this stuff. And so mm-hmm. this is their chance to partake.
Now, in a business sense, though, was it really difficult to convince? It was Harvey Weinstein, right?
Right.
Was it really difficult to convince him to put them together? Because it's a great idea, but
right, yeah.
You've got a 3.5-hour running time. You've got fewer showings. The whole deal, if you split them up, people will still go see your movie and Robert's movie?
Well, there definitely was talk about splitting it up about like pretty much about halfway through my movie. And it was just, you know, the thing is, like, the movies were getting longer. You know, it wasn't a faux double feature, which I never said it would be, actually. I always said this would be a genuine double feature, not like his is an hour and mine's an hour. No, it'd be the whole thing. And so it officially had become that. And the budget had crept up just a little bit. And so if we had split them up, then, like, all of a sudden all of our problems go away. All right? It's like, oh, okay, now they're actually very affordable movies, and here we go.
So don't do that is what you said.
Yeah, and I said, exactly.
Because
like,
that'll make my problems go away.
It's like I said, that's not the point, all right? It's like, it was, you know, at that moment, it was, if you're going to think about it, that was the time to think about it. But it was like, look, guys, you know, no, we're gamblers, man. This is what we're doing. We were doing this. It's time to roll the dice. The whole idea was to do this. The fans are waiting for this. We got to go.
Okay.
And that's what you did.
Is there talk about splitting it up in other countries and other places around the world?
No, we're going to actually. So we are going to split it up in other countries. And I'm actually really excited about that. I actually kind of like the idea of different versions for, you know, I did that with Kill Bill. I did a whole big Japanese version that was released in Asia. And the thing is, but it wasn't our idea. The distributors really wanted to split it up because, well, they didn't really have grindhouses. They don't have double features. Aren't part of their, you know,
their
lineage.
History at all,
yeah,
right.
Their history. So, but not only that, the thing I really like about it is me and Robert. You know, it was actually a very. It's not even an exercise, but it was just a very interesting, I guess, artistic exercise. I guess we had to cut our movies to the bone.
Right.
To actually make it work in this double feature thing so you weren't exhausted.
Otherwise, it's way too long.
Yeah, it's just going to be way too long.
Yeah, and nice move, Tarantino, cutting out all the sex scenes, too. Thanks for that. Yeah, thanks for taking the. Thanks for deciding that the nudity is what needs to be cut out.
Hey, you know, it's like, the reel's missing. It's not my fault.
Yeah, like, no, don't delete that scene.
You went to the wrong theater.
Who took the reel?
The reel was missing
in your theater.
That hurt. Yeah, no one wants to see Rose McGowan fall back into the bed and be prepared to have sweet love made to her and then see the screen come up and go, real missing. I'm like, damn you.
Hey, that was your theater, dude.
Did that stuff get shot is the question we all have. And yes. Will it someday end up back in the movie?
Well, if we find it.
I'll listen to you.
Wow.
Hey, speaking of these double features, we had Kurt Russell on, who I am just as enamored of as you are. I mean, yeah. The guy's unbelievable in both halves of this movie, and just a phenomenal actor. And God bless you for, you know, for bringing him back and putting him in the kind of movie that he can be a badass again. But he was he's the first guy that told us about what this thing that you have going on, this New Beverly Cinema thing that you're doing. And it's been going on for weeks now and still going on. These movies that you're showing, you're actually showing the kinds of double features that you grew up loving. You know, movies like Hot Summer in Barefoot County.
Oh, yeah, that's actually a big regional, especially if you got through watching Death Proof this week and with the heart, you know, the big high-octane car action. I actually, Friday and Saturday, is like, it's a two regional drive-in movies, which means they were like amateurs, you know, one was based out of North Carolina, the other one is like based out of Georgia. Amateurs got together with their friends and made some like drive-in moonshining movie.
Right.
And then it was just released throughout the drive-ins in the South. And the two features we're showing are Hot Summer in Barefoot County, which I saw in a drive-in in Tennessee the week it came out. I mean, in Tennessee. All right.
What else are you going to do?
Yeah. And then, Redneck Miller. And we've actually added a third show. All right. We've actually added a third film that's not on the calendar. It's called In Hot Pursuit.
I like it.
Which is sort of like a couple of redneck barbarian brother type guys. All right. But they're rednecks. But the thing about both of these, but in particular, like In Hot Pursuit, it has wild car crashes and car chases in it. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is, like, you know, there was no stunt people involved in this. They just did it.
It's so small. Small budget.
Yeah, it's like Jackass.
Yeah, yes, exactly. The truck crashes are like the guys in Jackass doing truck crashes.
But these movies are showing this weekend at the New Beverly Cinema, and that's down on Beverly Boulevard. You can go to newbevcinema.com, and it's going on for another, you know, 10 days or something like that. You got a Bruce Lee double feature. You got, here's my favorite, The Swinging Barmaids, The Swinging Pussycats, and The Swinging Cheerleaders all on the same bill the weekend of April 20th.
That's going to be one of the best of the triple features. Yeah.
But Quentin, these movies come from your personal collection, is that right?
Yeah, I have a print collection. I started collecting prints just before Jackie Brown, so that would be probably about 96. Mm-hmm. And I started.
But how does that work? How does a guy find Redneck Miller, for instance, and get a copy of it that's in good enough shape now to play in a theater? How do you do it?
Some of them are barely in good enough shape to play in the theater, but I'm committing to doing it anyway. That's the grindhouse aesthetic.
They're all taped together?
Yeah, right. I just started collecting prints just the way, you know, I just found out that you, there's a newspaper. It's called The Big Reel,
mm-hmm.
and they sell posters and lobby cards and autographs and film prints. And basically, it's just collector to collector. So, you know, some guy in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, will list like six films that he's selling or trading, and then like, you know, I'll buy that. You know,
and these are not on DVD or video.
Some of them are. Some of them aren't. Most of the ones that I'm playing in my thing aren't. All right, they might have been released on video at some point in time.
Right. Right.
You know, but. But
you could have one of the few copies of some of these movies. I mean, you're like what Spielberg's doing with the film preservation. I mean, you're just trying to make sure this stuff exists for future generations.
Well, that's the thing about when you actually are a film print collector is as opposed to almost, you know, comic books, almost as opposed to anything else you could collect, you got a real responsibility. You don't know. There might come a time that you have the best print of something that exists on the planet Earth.
Right.
Right.
I remember, like, because I collect both 16 prints, and all of them are 35 at the New Beverly, but I collect 16 prints and 35 prints. And I remember one of the first prints I got was, you know, I'm a big fan of the Toho Japanese monster movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's the one with Nick Adams, Frankenstein Conquers the World, which is a really, really good one. I got my 16 print of it, and it was so gorgeous. It's like straight from the negative. And that's when it hit me. And this is like one of my first few months of collecting. It's like, this might be the best print of this that exists. I mean, I really can't even imagine a better one than this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I have it in my house. But it's even happened.
And your address is what?
Yeah, right. But it's even happened where it's actually people have heard that I have this print, and I'm the only access they have to get it. There's actually a director named Curtis Harrington, who's he made horror films in the 70s and the late 60s. He was kind of a protege of James Whales. And out of the blue in the 90s, he started getting a revival of his career, mm-hmm. just like, you know, in retrospect, in film festivals and stuff. And his best movie is a movie with Shelley Winters called Who Slew Annie Rue, which is sort of like a modern-day Hansel and Gretel story. And she's terrific in it. Anyway, he was having these little retrospectives, but that's like one of his best movies, and they could never find a print. But I had my... a beat up, crappy 16 print of it.
Right.
And so all of a sudden I was like sending it out like, you know, about four times that year, because whenever he'd go to another festival, hey, we can't find this one. Well, I know Quentin Tarantino has it. I get a little telegram.
Cool. You're the library
I'd
now.
Send it out, yeah. And so it was actually really gratifying to be able to do that.
That's cool.
And you do, and before we take a break, and Quentin Tarantino is in the studio, and we'll talk more about Grindhouse in a minute, but you do these movie nights at your house where you just invite over a bunch of friends and you show these movies that a lot of your friends have never seen. And that's what you guys do for entertainment on the weekend, huh?
Well, it's sort of like, it's like a, you know, the way when you invite people over to your house and you make them dinner because you're being social and everything like that. Well, I'm sort of like a frustrated theater owner, so that's my way of making dinner. That's my way of entertaining company.
So bring your own food, but I'll give you a movie you've
never
seen before.
Usually at the last second, we like, you know, order pizza, right? Sometimes in the second movie when people are famished.
All right, we have some...
I have booze!
That's all you need. We have some calls on hold already. If you'd like to talk to Quentin Tarantino, he's in our studio, and we'll take a quick break and come right back on... Quentin Tarantino in the studio with us. Grindhouse in the theaters now. Fantastic movie. We've all seen it. It's great.
Thanks a bunch.
Absolutely.
Quentin, we, you know, you exhaust us as you exhaust all interviewers, but I got to tell you, you now seem like a mute to us because we spoke with Rosario Dawson last week. Mm-hmm. Man, can that girl talk. Oh. Wow, is she enthusiastic?
Yes, she is.
I was going to ask her if you tired her out, but then I ended up asking her if she tired you out.
You know,
she's a chatter.
Yes, she is wonderful. She's got such enthusiasm.
Yeah.
She's so excited. I mean, you know what, Gunnis? I just actually am hearing myself talking. I'm actually hearing the same adjectives people use to describe me, to describe Rosario. And it just hit me right now as I was saying that.
Oh, yeah.
She's
awesome.
Fun. She's so much fun. And it's like she's already always plugged into like a spare battery pack.
Yeah. I wish I had access to that battery pack. And not in a sexual way, although that too.
She told us a great story.
But not in a sexual way.
Not really.
Not at all, no. She told us a great story, and she obviously had a blast. It sounded like it was a party out there. And I guess Texas is where you shot
Austin.
Sound like it was the time of her life being out there. But she was telling us this story about how particular you are about the dialogue. That you basically, you don't, even though it sounds like it's real people talking sometimes, mm-hmm. it sounds like there may be some improv or some fudging a little bit. Mm-hmm. You're a hard ass when it comes to the words that you write. You want it exactly the way you want it. Is that accurate?
It's pretty accurate. I mean, I'm not 100% every if, and, but. But I pretty much am because... It's, you know, my dialogue is, it's, you know, my dialogue is special. I'm more like a playwright,
than a
guy who writes most movie dialogue. And you don't just, you know, improvise plays, all right?
Right. And you've got a scene in the movie where they're sitting around the breakfast table chatting. And I guess it's like a 6 or 7 minute scene that was all done in one take. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, it's one shot, all right?
We did one shot, takes, right.
Right.
Yeah, right.
One shot. Right.
That sounds unusual. That doesn't get done in movies anymore, does it?
Well, it's like, it was really interesting because it was like this big, long, it literally was about like an 8-page scene, if not more. And I'd even shot like half of the coverage, which is all the little pieces, mm-hmm. the day before, and then I was getting ready to do the whole second half the next day, and then I got home at night, and I know the scene by heart, so I started, well, wait a minute, maybe I could do this all in one take, one shot, maybe that'll work. And so kind of like a phantom in my hotel room, I was just kind of working it out with the camera. Well, the camera would be here. Is there any place that, like, I'd be in the wrong place at that time? And it seemed like it would work out pretty good, so I showed up the next day. Okay, everybody, remember what we're going to do? Forget it. We're going to do it all in one shot.
Oh, I bet
they love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And let's work it out from the beginning. So me and the focus puller and the dolly grip, it was us just kind of working it out and making it work. And then when we did it, but I could come up with the grooviest shot in the world. If those ladies aren't able to like nail the scene without any apologies and like it actually makes it better that it's one take because no one's messed up, then it wouldn't have worked. But they just nailed it. I think it's one of the best scenes I've ever done. I love that scene.
You, the car chases that you have with Kurt Russell playing Stuntman Mike, you wanted to do old school, like they were shot in the 70s. No CGI, no green screen, everything that we see you guys do with those cars, you did with those cars.
Well, you know, one of the things about it is, personally, I mean, I just remember going to see the going to a movie to see a car chase was actually one of the reasons to go to the movies in the 70s. Like from Bullet on, when you know he kind of introduced the new style car chase in Bullet, it's like, remember, you'd hear, oh wow, I heard this is like the best chase ever, and you'd go see
right.
it. And maybe it wasn't the best chase ever, but at the time you were watching it, it seemed like it was the best chase. But for my money, the last really great chase in a car chase in a movie was the one in Terminator 2. With the big truck and the motorcycle, then they're going down the reservoir.
Down the LA River, That was very
That was great. To me, since then, people are like, oh, what about Ronan? I didn't even remember Ronan had a car chase. The thing about it is, since then, it's like all this CGI has come into it. And it's like the first time I actually saw a car crash in CGI, I thought it was like the cheapest thing I'd ever seen. I mean, they've been crashing movies since the silent days. A computer-generated car is supposed to, like, get me off? No, I don't think so.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, that just happens more and more and more. But not only that, they will also, you know, you edit now with these video editing machines. It actually makes editing very easier, all right? And nothing wrong with that, except it can make it too easy, and you can have too many cuts going on.
You can't see what's actually going on.
You can't see enough.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
There's no good driving anymore involved in this. There's no geography. You're not going from any. There's no distances being covered during the course of a chase. Not only that, they even do things where it's like, you know, anytime they do a big stunt, you know, I'm talking about obviously a big Hollywood movie, but that's pretty much the only ones that are made now having car chases, all right? It's big Hollywood, independent movies doing it. So, you know, you have a big stunt, and so like naturally they put like 11 cameras, you know, all these different angles to capture the stunt. Well, look, I'm here to tell you, you put 11 cameras down, 7 of them are going to have fantastic angles. Well, now they feel they have to use every little bit of those.
Right.
So now everything is just cut, and you know, you don't sense anything. You don't feel, you're not in the driver's seat. You're not getting sweaty. It might be exciting. It might be thrilling, but it's not the chase. So that's what I wanted to bring back to it, was that kind of, and people sweat. They actually break into a sweat watching the chase in Death Proof, which I'm really proud about.
Now, speaking of that, quickly, then we're going to take one phone call. Did you see 300? Because a lot of that was CGI, and I thought that was awesome.
You know what?
Did you like that or no?
I loved 300. In fact, the thing that was so funny was the day, I noticed that the Thursday before Death Proof opened up at the Grauman's Chinese, 300 was still in the big. It was in the big Grauman's, and
I saw when you were on Jimmy Kimmel.
And I hadn't seen it yet, and I go, well, if I'm going to see it, now's the time. So I actually went and saw the movie that my movie was going to take over at the Grauman's, and I thought it was fracking awesome, man. It was fantastic. Now you know. Now the thing is. Like, I'm just saying, I don't like all that CGI stuff. No, I don't. That's not my way.
And
digital is not my way. But it's Robert's way. And, you know, Robert did the same thing as 300 when he did Sin City.
Right.
And in watching, you know, there was exceptions to every rule. And to me, the way that Robert did Sin City, the way Zack Snyder did 300, you know, that's the only way you can do that. If you're going to really try to adapt those Frank Miller graphic novels and do it like the panels, they were able to create something that, you know, just didn't exist before.
Right.
You know, I'm not really even down with movies that actually take graphic novels and adapt them to movies, because it's kind of cheating. They're already kind of movies.
Right.
You know, you adapt.
They're written that way.
Yeah, you adapt a novel, then that's hard work. Yeah. All right. You adapt even a normal comic book. They were never meant to be movies. That's hard work. The graphic novels just kind of, they're already done. But in the case of like both Robert and Zack Snyder with 300 and Sin City, is like their imagination was, how do they capture that?
Right.
Frank Miller gave you the imagination for the creation. Now how to capture that on cinema? They had to bring their own imagination. And so, oh man, I love 300. The thought is terrific.
Let me squeeze in one phone call. We have Quentin Tarantino here. We have Steven on the line, Moreno Valley. Good morning, Steven.
How you guys doing?
Good.
You're on. Okay, I'm not going to start crying or anything, but I'm definitely going to need a cigarette after this.
Thanks, Steven.
No problem. Quentin, huge fan. My question to you is, I study your movies. I study your dialogue. I think it's probably the best dialogue out there, definitely the best dialogue out there. And my question to you is, how did you sell your first screenplay? Like, how do you What's some good advice you can give me for that?
I read that it was called Captain Peach Fuzz and the Anchovy Bandit.
Yeah, that was the first time I tried to write a screenplay.
That's a great title.
It was. I had just seen Smokey and the Bandit. I actually, I was like 14 years old. I got home and saw Smokey and the Bandit and started writing my own version of it. But that one, I think, only got like 20 pages. Okay. That was my whole thing. I would see a movie and be inspired by it and go home and try to write my version of it.
So this guy.
Some people can say I still do that. But
how does he get his script noticed?
Well, the thing about it was, I'm not really the guy to ask because it took me a long time. My first script was True Romance.
Okay.
That was the first script ever finished and, that's the first script I ever finished. Yeah. And actually, Reservoir Dogs got made first. Actually.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah. But it was the first one I ever finished. And so I spent 5 years trying to get it going, and it just never happened. It never happened, never happened. And finally, after I was originally going to direct it, then I stand down, and it was just like, whatever. But it took me forever to finally get it made. But here's the, or to get it sold. Here's the thing. Is if you write good dialogue, if you write well, and if you're trying to go a little different way than everybody else, then you got to get past these readers, these script readers.
How do you do that?
That's tough.
Doesn't everyone in Hollywood have script readers? Is that how it works? And then they kind of pass them forward, the ones they think are good?
Yeah, and the problem with it is usually the things that make your script unique or special or outside of the box or even good writing, for that matter, are the things that are going to flag a reader. It's like, oh, it's wrong.
Right.
And you never know who these people are. I mean, they could just, they could be anybody, all right? And the point being is, when I finally started having traction in my career is when the actual executives started reading my scripts. They, not to say that they're the brightest people on the planet Earth, but they read a lot of scripts.
Right.
So they know good writing, at least.
Right.
When they see it. They could, they can read my, they could have read my stuff back then and the people of all the New Line or Miramax or whatever.
Right.
They might have very well say, well, I don't know if this is definitely a voice. I don't know if it's a commercial voice. That remains to be seen. But it's definitely a voice.
Right.
And let me read other material by this young man.
How does Steven get to those people, though? Is it...
Does he
have to break into their homes?
The answer to the question is that's part of it.
Don't know.
How you do it and how it eventually gets there, that's the game. You only appreciate the game when you played the game.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So let me ask you this, too, and then we desperately have to take a break, but we'll get to some more calls and talk some more with Quentin in a minute. But these days, with as inexpensive as it is to make a movie that even looks pretty decent, what do you think about people shooting stuff and putting it up on YouTube, for instance, kind of actually producing it in some limited fashion to get it noticed that way? Because it seems like that's where a lot of deals for television shows and whatnot are coming from, or people who start that way.
Hey, I am all down with anybody doing what they want to do and getting it out there in any way they can, whether it burning DVDs of it, putting it on YouTube, I'm just down with, people should just be able to make the thing that, my feeling is this, actually, is you should be able to, you should have a story in you. You should have something inside of you that you want to do and get out there. It's not like, I want to make a movie just to make a movie. That's, there's too much of that going on as it is,
right,
even in the professional arenas. You should have this, when somebody sits down and writes a novel for the first time, they can maybe be the worst writer in the world. But, it's sitting down to write a novel is hard work. There was something inside of them that had to get out. And I wish people who are writing scripts more that if they, I wish they had a movie inside of them burning to get out. Instead, more often than not, it's like, I want to write a script because I want to write a script.
Right.
So what do I want to write? Well, I'll do a cop buddy thing, but it'll be set in Tijuana. And it's like they're writing what they think people want to see, not what they want to say. They're not trying to communicate anything.
And then you go to a movie and you go, how did this get made? How did this get made? You ask yourself that 100 times during the course of a year.
Right.
It's crazy.
Exactly. All right. Thank you for the call on that, though. And good luck with the maybe you'll be a guest on our show in 10 years. Talking about your new movie.
You need to finish Captain Peach Fuzz and the Anchovy Bandit, by the way.
Yeah, I think so, too.
8:40, Quentin Tarantino is here. Grindhouse is in the theaters, and we will be right back. I don't talk this much in the course of a week. I don't say this many words in the course of an entire week. I don't know how you do it.
Kind of wrapped up, doesn't he?
Wow.
Quentin Tarantino is in the studio of K-Rock. In our remaining moments, we have less than 10 minutes left with Mr. Tarantino.
Yes, yeah. It was really cool. I had this really wonderful moment once when Clint Eastwood was producing a documentary on the old Western director Bud Bedecker.
Okay.
And actually, they're showing it on the cable channels now. And so they, so he wanted me to do an interview.
Right.
And so I go to do the interview, and then all of a sudden the director of the documentary says, hey, Clint wants to come and do an interview with you about Bud Bedecker. I go, oh, okay, sure. So all of a sudden I'm sitting right next to Clint Eastwood, and we're talking about Westerns and Bud Bedecker and da-da-da-da-da. And then finally, when the whole thing is over, 45 minutes later, they go, okay, so the director goes, so Clint, you got anything else you want to say? Anything else I want to say? This guy, I've talked more in my last four movies.
That's true. That's so true.
Hey, Quentin, I love having you in and hearing you know, the passion you have for making films. But when you have to deal with the studio, you know, the studio system, the kinds of movies you make, and the expectations that are associated with the films that you make because you're Quentin Tarantino, do you ever want to do like Steven Soderbergh does, which is just to basically take a home video camera and go out there and shoot a movie with your friends in a week? I mean, or is that something you're not interested in anymore because you've been there, done that?
You know, I could be interested in that, but not so much the home video camera. I have my own 35mm camera, so if I was going to do something like that, I'd still want to do it on film.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm just really not into that whole digital thing. My whole feeling is, if I care enough about to do it, to put my life on hold, then I want it to be on film. I want it to be 24 frames a second. I mean, like, part of my love for that, it's not just, hanging on to old schoolness. Is, to me, there's a thing. Is, like, you know, videotape, digital, whatever, that's a recording device.
Right.
Film, there's a reason why film has a magic. Whether you, what you call the magic of the movies, it's actually tangible. And what that is this, is there is no movement in film. It's a series of still frames that when you show them at a proper speed through a light, it creates the illusion of movement. You're never, ever seeing what you think you're seeing. It's all an optical illusion. And that illusion, to me, is the magic of movies.
What's he? I don't understand. Does anyone know what he's talking about?
I think I got it.
Okay, I'm confused. I'm really sorry. No, I'm just kidding. Do you have, in this city with actors and actresses everywhere, do you have people coming up to you all the time, like, you know, Kurt Russell in this one and John Travolta in Pulp Fiction and people like that? Do you have a lot of older, kind of out of
favor
actors and actresses that come up to you and say, I want you to do that for me. I want you to.
Well,
does that happen to you a lot or no? Because it seems like you could pick somebody that hasn't been famous in a long time and you know there's something there.
Yeah. Well, I don't really know if Kurt Russell falls into that camp, all right? You know,
he's been doing like Disney-fied movies for 20 years or whatever, and but you used him differently.
Yeah, no, I did. That's for sure. That's for sure. But, well, yeah, it's like, you know, people come by and then, like, you know, they'll also hear me talk about stuff, you know, like, you know, I could very well be giving an interview and they ask me, you know, they'll ask me about, well, who are some people you like? Oh, I'm a big Robert Culp fan. And I am a big Robert Culp fan. He's the man.
Right.
And stuff. But the thing about it is, it never works either when a star like that or like when a big movie star, when somebody says, like, well, who are some stars you want to work with? It doesn't work like that with me, because there's a zillion people I would love to work with. But it is all about my scripts. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm creating these characters. And then it's like I'm looking for actors to play these
characters
to make them come to life. And any time I've ever got, like, you know, jazzed or like intrigued by an actor because they have a really interesting quality that was a little different from my character, but I went with it anyway because I was excited about the actor, I always regretted it.
Is that right?
Really? Interesting.
At some point, unless I could really incorporate it into the character, then I went with the actor as opposed to my character, and then there'll be some disconnect some way along the way, and I can't even say anything about it because I went down a different road.
Right.
But you'd be the only person who would know that.
No, the rest of us
just going to watch the movie, we think, hey, that person is great for that role, right?
No, you're 100%. You're 100% correct. If I'm doing my job right and they're doing their job right, they'll still be interesting and it's a really terrific performance. But as far as, you know, I created these characters, so I'm their father. It really is my job to take care of them.
Right.
But you had to have written Jackie Brown for Pam Grier.
Tell me
that you had her in mind, right?
Oh, you better believe it. From the very beginning.
Yeah, she had to be, right.
Yeah. What was interesting about that was a situation because, like, Elmer Leonard wrote it for a white girl. And just when I was trying to imagine who this person could possibly be at this age, I go, well, kind of sounds like Pam Grier to me. And from that point on, I was writing a Pam Grier movie.
Quentin Tarantino is here. Let's try to squeeze in a couple calls before you have to go. Let's start with Mike and Bell, because he saw the movie and has a complaint, Quentin. And how often do you get a chance? You know, this isn't like going to the manager at the Office Depot. How often do you get a chance to talk to the filmmaker with your complaint? Mike, you're on with Quentin Tarantino. We're talking about Grindhouse. Go ahead.
Hey, Quinn. I love the movie, dude. Love all your movies. Everything's great. My question is, why did you have to destroy those two cars?
Oh, man. Yeah, the big battle between the Dodge Charger and the Dodge Challenger. Believe me, there was a lot...
Mopars.
There was a lot of people groaning when we were having to do that. You know, actually, one of the things that was funny is we had about seven of each of the Chargers. Wow. And the Challenger. And I remember talking to the transportation guy who was like, you know, whose job was to buy these things. He goes, look, here's the thing. When we buy these from these collectors, we can't tell them we're going to destroy them.
Right, of course.
Or they'll never sell them to us.
Of course, yeah.
Why?
Well, just so you'll know, I actually own both the Charger and the Challenger now. They're in my parking lot. They're in my driveway. Thank you. All right, my parking lot. I live at Walmart. Thank you very much. Right. Home section.
You know the way you collect cars from your movies, though. Eventually, your neighbors are gonna ask the white trash Quentin Tarantino to move out of the neighborhood because you have so many cars out on blocks in the backyard or something.
Yeah, I'm totally turning into the George Barris of film directors.
Right.
I'll be on all the auto shows with like the Pussy Wagon, the Munster car.
Yeah, the original Batmobile.
The original Batmobile. Yep. But the thing is, we ended up, there was actually one Charger and one Challenger that we never destroyed the frame. It was just all fine. Mm-hmm. And so what the mechanics did is they made a big Frankenstein monster for me of a car where they went through all the parts of all the other ones we destroyed and took the best parts out and put it all on my Charger and Challenger. So I got the ones, baby.
You know, the caller is so right, though, because my brother is one of these gearheads who just loves that era of American Mopars, and he would weep if he saw this. He would say, it's such a tragedy. But you all kind of address that in the movie because you've got these characters who are rabid. I mean, that's why they find this car.
Oh, yeah,
is because
exactly.
They're rabid for this car. And yet they, you know, they did what they had to do, I guess, under the circumstances.
Let me ask you a question because you guys saw the chase and everything. Isn't there like almost like the whole way that we're trying to do a Grindhouse where like we're taking something that doesn't exist anymore in this film industry that we live in now, and you throw it in a multiplex next to all the other movies with the multiplex, and it's like, wow, this really stands out amongst all these other films. Didn't you feel that way during the chase when they're actually on the highway and like these two badass muscle cars are weaving in and out of these GPS, you know, SUVs and their tracking systems and their satellite radio?
No, it's old school. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Hey, let me get the plugs in again because this thing that we're talking about that's going on at the New Beverly Cinema that sounds like so much fun. You are actually going to be there tomorrow night? Do I have that right?
Tonight, actually.
Tonight you're going to be there.
Yeah,
okay.
I go there. I play it by ear. I go there whenever I can. But the thing is, don't ask for an autograph or bring anything for me to sign. I ain't signing nothing. It's about we're hanging out watching a movie together.
And tonight, tell us about the film. Slithus? Is that one of them?
Slithus and Screams of a Winter Night. Part of the thing of this double feature was these are two extremely, extremely low-budget horror films from the 70s, independently made, actually probably regional productions. And they're really good. I actually saw them when they came out, and they're fun. And Slithus is in particularly fun because it's like a modern-day Creature of the Black Lagoon kind of movie. And I actually, we got even one of the things, and I had it when it came out, they gave it to me at the box office. They had a Slithus survival kit that you would get. It's just a piece of paper, all right? But it was all the things you can do to protect yourself from the Slithus. They had that at the theaters, and I still actually have mine. So we actually printed up a whole bunch of them. So if you go to the New Beverly tonight, with your ticket, you'll get a Slithus survival kit.
Oh, that's fun. Cool. That's awesome. So that'll be tonight. And again, you can go to newbevcinema.com. And at some point, Quentin, before you go, we will see longer versions of yours and Robert's movie, like maybe for the DVD or something?
Yes. As a matter of fact, what's going to happen is, one, the films will be released on DVD for the first go around will be separate as we were talking earlier before, we cut our movies to the bone for Grindhouse, but we'll be putting it all back in for our separate releases. Mine will have about a half hour more footage, and Robert's will have about 20 minutes more footage. And actually, and we're taking it overseas to the non-English language countries. They'll be showing them separately.
Okay.
So the Death Proof proper, the longer version of it, it's actually going to get its premiere at the Cannes Film Festival. We're in competition there.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, all right. Cool. Good
times. That'll be when the world sees that.
Fantastic.
Well, you know, we always love having you in, man. You're very cool after all the success and all the other options you have to still make time to come back to K-Rock. And we always enjoy it, man. Thanks, man.
Thanks for coming in. Grindhouse is in theaters.
I'm exhausted, frankly. I need to curl up and take a little nap. Yeah. That's what I need to do after quitting.
I am too, and he did all the work.
Yeah, exactly. Chris Pronger from the Anaheim Ducks, of course, in their series against the Minnesota Wild, round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll catch up with Mr. Pronger coming up after the news. First, Ralph is here with the showbiz. Good morning, Ralph.
Another day, another celebrity sex tape.
I use celebrity in the loosest of all possible terms. It is an American Idol contestant from season two named Olivia Mojica.
Yeah, I do not recall. How far did she get the competition?
I think she reached the top 24, and that was about it.
Okay.
Anyway, she's got a sex video coming out, courtesy of Vivid Entertainment, the people behind the Kim Kardashian X-rated video. This is something made with her and her boyfriend a month ago, according to TMZ.com, in their New York City apartment. It is set to hit shelves on May 3rd. People at Vivid Entertainment claim they obtained the footage through an unidentified third party, but they are currently trying to contact Olivia Mojica to see if she will help promote the video and share in its revenue from the sale. Listen, we're putting out your video.
Celebrity?
Would you like to join us, or would you like to make some money, or are you going to be a pain in the ass and fight us on this?
Don't ask. Just put it out.
She's pretty cute, but I don't know who she is.
I don't either.
Yeah. Hardcoreidol.com is the website if you want to check it out. See, because it's hardcore and she's an American Idol.
I don't get it.
Yeah. You know, I think the Beatles need more money.
They do.
We should give them more money.
Oh, that poor sad band.
I hate how broke they all are. Apparently, someone was doing some overseeing of the books at AppleCorp, which is the organization that runs pretty much all the trademarked materials for the Beatles and stuff. That's sort of their corporate entity.
Right.
And they found out that EMI, the huge mega conglomerate, Capitol Records and EMI over in England, they underpaid them in royalties for years' worth of sales of product that they were moving under the Beatles' name.
How do they find that out now?
The Beatles said, looks like we're owed about $60 million from you guys.
What?
No kidding.
And EMI looked at the book and said, yeah, our bad.
Wow.
So they're going to pay them $60 million.
Thank God. They can eat again.
Paul and Ringo, finally we'll have a few bucks to throw around, and the families of John and George will get their share as well. So.
Wow.
$60 million. Oh, we screwed up to the tune of $60 million. Here's a check.
Yes, our bad. How come that never happens to us?
Because we don't practice the secret. The Beatles just started practicing the secret.
We have no talent and never created anything of any value.
Oh, there's that.
Okay. Yeah. In movie news, Brendan Fraser has announced he will be back for Mummy 3. Woo!
Oh, no.
Woo!
Really?
I'm sorry, did you say Mummy 3?
Daily Variety says it's a done deal. He'll be back starring in Mummy 3, The Mortgage Payment, it's called.
I don't think so.
Co-star Rachel Weisz has declined to participate in the third installment in the Mummy series.
Yeah.
I wonder why. Well, maybe it's because she's collected an Oscar since the Mummy films have come out.
There is that.
Yeah. She's a real actress now, so she doesn't really have to. But the good news is Anna Nicole Smith's last film, Illegal Aliens, is set to make its debut at the Cannes Film Festival. And then it'll be out on DVD in May, so you can pick it up if you want to check it out. It's a sci-fi comedy, which means it's going to suck on two levels.
Oh, man.
And co-stars Chyna from the WWE.
Oh, yeah.
Anna Nicole Smith and Chyna.
Yeah.
Finally, the actors teaming we've been waiting for in show business.
Quentin Tarantino was very depressed. He didn't want to say anything, but he didn't get to direct that movie. He was up for it. Didn't get it.
Jimmy Kimmel showed a clip last night, and you won't even believe it ever got made. It's so bad. I can't wait.
Yeah.
We had Jay Moore on the show yesterday.
Yeah.
Did he mention he's got a new TV sitcom coming on?
No.
No?
There was something to bring up.
No, not at all.
Yeah. It's just announced in The Hollywood Reporter that he will be starring with Brian Austin Green from Beverly Hills 90210 in a sitcom about two sitcom writers. One is straight, and the other's gay. And they are partners, and the hilarity ensues because they're different.
And which is he?
He's the straight guy.
Okay.
Ryan Austin Green would be the gay guy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The show's expecting to be in development for CBS for the fall season. So
didn't mention that.
Jay's got a gig.
The way Jay was talking yesterday, he's available for any work that anyone has for money because of his divorce. So if you've always wanted Jay Moore in your high school musical, now's the time to call him.
Write a check.
Yep.
And America's Got Talent, the reality TV show, is coming back to television on NBC. However, it will have a new host because Regis Philbin hosted previously. He is still recuperating from bypass surgery.
Dead, right?
So he's not dead.
Oh, not dead. No.
Sorry. Jerry Springer has been tapped to fill in as host. And they've lost a judge as well. Brandy will no longer be participating as one of the judges. You know, it's Hasselhoff and Brandy and somebody else. I don't know.
Some English-speaking dude, I think.
Yeah.
I think they all speak English, Kevin.
No, I mean British.
Sharon Osbourne will be replacing Brandy as the...
Sharon Osbourne.
As the judge. So you got that to look forward to.
She just killed one guy in traffic. All of a sudden, now she can't be a judge on a reality TV show?
That's what's going on with K-Rock.com.
Bean at K-Rock.com.
I didn't say she was an happy-headed hoe. Come on.
Oh, God.
Jeez. I didn't say that. That's my point.
Just turn his mic off.
He didn't say that, though.
I know. That's
He's right.
Today's celebrity birthdays. David Letterman, 60 years old today. One of the best talk show hosts maybe ever.
Sure.
Yeah, that show is just solid as can be. Andy Garcia, one of our favorite actors, 51 years old today. Art Alexakis from Everclear turns 45. Nick Hexum is 37 years old today. He, of course, from 311. Nicholas Brendan, who was Xander on Buffy, he's 36. Shannon Doherty is 36 as well. Guy Berryman, bassist for Coldplay, turns 29. And Claire Danes, who Sucko Mike has informed us is the chick dancing around in the cargo pants in the Gap commercial. Where she wears her boyfriend's pants.
Okay.
How about that?
That's okay. Claire Danes.
Okay.
Don't ask me why, but it's her.
They get celebrities to do that.
Yeah, I guess they do, but
sometimes.
You think they would feature her more prominently so you would actually recognize it. I wouldn't have known it until Mike had told us.
Great legs on that broad.
She's well-built.
Very attractive. Yeah.
28 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
We should do something for 420, don't you think?
It is a holiday here at K-Rock, I'll tell you that. I know Lisa's looking forward to it, especially this year.
Oh, yeah.
First year anniversary.
Special brownies coming in. Yeah.
Can't wait.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock 106.7 KROQ. Kevin, we are rapidly getting past the time of year that you love the most in sports when you got the NBA Finals and the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs happening at the same time. And then it's over. And then what happens to you?
Just baseball. And I just and sit then it's there just and baseball. Cry.
Well, a lot of people are picking the Ducks to go all the way, and they are looking phenomenal right now. And we're very excited to welcome back to the program the man who was instrumental in their big win last night in game one of the playoffs against Minnesota. Ladies and gentlemen, from your Anaheim Ducks, Chris Pronger on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Hey, Chris, how are you, man? We're doing great. How you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good.
Good.
What's it like as you come down? And it's probably the same for the teams in the NBA. As they come down and they know they're going to be in the playoffs, and you got to kind of burn up that last quarter of the season knowing you're going to be in the playoffs, trying to stay healthy, but, you know, trying to keep your momentum going. Is it difficult?
Well, I think with the teams that were chasing us and us obviously trying to get the highest seed possible, you still have something to play for. And it was kind of touch and go the last 10 or so games with the teams chasing us for our division and us trying to catch Detroit and Nashville for first in our conference. So we had a lot to play for, and certainly the games were playoff style atmosphere. So that helps in your preparation for the playoffs.
This season is the first time the Ducks have ever won a Pacific Division championship, as I understand. Even though they've had a lot of success, been to the Cup before, this was, I mean, it really was kind of making some history with the team this year.
Yeah, that's what I understand. We had a great year, and certainly that's only the first step in where we want to be. It puts us in a good position, but at the same time, we need to take advantage of that. And home ice last night was definitely working our favor. The fans did a great job of making some noise and being involved in the game and trying to be that sixth attacker that they can be. And can't say enough about how the crowd and everybody responded to us last night. It was an awesome feeling.
You know, one of the great things about hockey, especially lately, is it doesn't seem like there's a dynasty anymore like there has been at various periods in the sport's history. I mean, it almost seems like anybody can win. I mean, you look at last year, you know, the two teams, Edmonton and Carolina, that were in the Stanley Cup, not even in the playoffs this year. So, I mean, it does give all teams hope right now.
There's a tremendous amount of parity in our league, and I think that's one of the reasons why, whether you're a one seed, an eight seed, four or five seed, anybody in the playoffs can win, and that's kind of an exciting thing for not only the players but for the fans that are watching their teams and trying to get into the playoff fever. is that there's no dynasty where it's a foregone conclusion that this team's going to win.
Right.
And that's fun, I think.
Tell us about the rules changes. In overtime, in the playoffs, you can play for 2 weeks.
Right? I mean, it turns into a cricket match.
It goes on forever, right?
You know what? Pretty much. Last year, I played two triple overtime games. I know there was a long game last night up in Vancouver.
Yeah, it was four overtimes in Vancouver.
Yes.
Yeah, it's tiring, believe me. You just eventually, as you saw last night, the pace slows down a little bit. As every once in a while, it'll pick up when teams get their second, third, fourth, sometimes fifth win. But, yeah, it can be a grind. It's certainly a relief when somebody scores.
Yeah, you think of people laying down on the ice, just score someone. We just have to go home.
You take it. No, seriously, I just want you to have it. I really got to go home, you know? We're talking to a Chris Pronger, of course, from the Ducks about the march to the Stanley Cup again this year. You know, so much of success in the playoffs depends on your goalie being hot at the right time. And, you know, John Sebastian Jaguar, of course, has had, you know, such a magnificent playoff history. But now he's in a tough, you know, personal spot. I know he did not play last night. How much of a difference does that make in not having the guy that you're used to having, you know, in the net all year, not be really at 100% this week?
Well, it was a difficult situation for Jiggy, and certainly we as players and obviously management and ownership feel for him and certainly supported him throughout his ordeal. But with him being 1A and Briz being 1B, we feel comfortable with both guys in the net, and that's a very nice luxury to have, as you know, Anaheim fans saw last year with Jiggy starting and then Briz coming in and kind of going on that run. Having two guys that you feel comfortable with as being number one goalies is an extremely nice luxury to have. If anybody, touch wood, happens to get injured, you got another guy there that's just as capable and everybody feels just as comfortable with. Or if one guy's playing better than the other, as happens, right. And one guy gets hot, you got to kind of ride that guy. And certainly with the way Briz played last night, we're excited. But at the same time, it's a relief, and everybody's excited to have Jiggy back in the room and practicing again.
You played a lot of your years in St. Louis with the Blues. And I was wondering, in those early years in St. Louis, they did not support that team very much, did they? It was kind of rough, wasn't it?
Well, you know what? There's a real strong fan base in St. Louis, and it was a little bit of a rough patch my first couple of years.
Yeah.
A lot of fans were revolting against Mike Keenan and kind of things that he was doing to the hockey team. But once he got fired and we started making strides in the right direction, they came out in droves. And, you know, I think you could pretty much say that for a lot of franchises and a lot of cities, that they just want to see a competitive team on the ice, and
right.
They want to see you making the right steps and the right moves in the right direction. And, you know, we've certainly done that here in Anaheim with the new ownership and management and player movement. You know, and hopefully we can be a contender for a long time coming and have a nice long stretch drive here and win that cup.
Well, not the least of which, by the way, was giving up 100 picks to get you, Chris. I mean, I think that showed some real commitment. I mean, Anaheim's not going to draft another new player till 2011, thanks
That's
to you,
right.
You know?
That's right, at least not in the first round.
You know, I want to ask you one other thing, and you're, again, especially coming off a game last night, you're awesome to take the time to call us today. We always appreciate getting a chance to talk to you. But we did K-Rock Night down there at the Honda Center a few weeks ago. We just had a blast. We took, you know, like 100 K-Rock listeners down there and went down there and saw the game. And I see what you mean about the fans. I mean, the fans were just rabid at that game for y'all. But I want to ask you about the girls that come out and help clean up the ice in between periods. First of all, how is that not more widely known? Why was I surprised to see that? That should be in all of the commercials. Those girls that skate out there were so gorgeous. Tell me at least you get to take them on the road when you have to travel to Minnesota.
There needs to be more and more fans and more people that are just catching on to that.
Noticing that, right?
Yeah.
Well, I had no idea. And I'm sitting there with Kevin, you know, and he goes to a lot of the Kings games because we, you know, we live up here and stuff. And he's like, dude, they don't do this. They don't do
no.
this at the Kings games. I got some dude comes out.
Got some hairy guy.
I was getting interviewed the other a couple weeks ago, and a guy was asking me, man, you guys got some hot janitors. And I'm like, what are you guys talking about? It took me a while before I clued in that he's talking about the ice girls
from
the ice. And I was like, what are you talking about, janitors?
That needs to sweep the league is what that needs to sweep.
It should be a requirement.
Every single team, yeah.
I mean, I don't mind telling you, Chris. I'm just being honest here, man. I just wanted you guys to get off the ice. I seriously, it's like, you know I paid my ticket, but seriously, move aside, you know? That was good times. All right, so here's the deal. So you're up 1-0, best of seven here in round one. You're back at home again tomorrow night. You got the home ice advantage again tomorrow night. And I don't have this in front of me. Maybe you know, sold out, or can people still call the Wild Wing and try to get some tickets?
I don't know, but I'm going to say there's a good likelihood that it's sold out. I think the last two or three months of the season here at home, we've been sold out. So,
right.
I'm sure it doesn't hurt to make a phone call, but I think we are sold out. But
okay.
Don't quote me.
Okay. Yeah, 877-WILD-WING is the phone number. Of course, you can go to any Ticketmaster outlet or Ticketmaster.com to find out more, too.
But if you meet Chris on the street, he's got hundreds of tickets.
Yeah, just come up and ask.
Just ask him for him. He'll just throw them out to you.
Yeah, just roll them. That's right. Well, Chris, very exciting, man. Congratulations for last night.
We wish you about 100 tickets at all times.
That's how you roll?
Yeah. Hey, we wish you and the guys all the best on the road to the Stanley Cup, man. Hope we get to talk again soon.
Thank you very much, guys. Have fun. Take care.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye-bye.
Time for your phone calls, 1-800-520-1067. As usual, that's the number. We're going to put you on the air and give you a prize.
Is he really here this weekend? Is the 33rd Annual Toyota Grand Prix? It's happening. We got tickets for you for Saturday. For tickets, you can go to longbeachgp.com. Hey, we're supposed to be talking to one of the drivers tomorrow, too. Aren't we supposed to do that?
Oh, how about that? Yeah, I think so.
Dick Tracy.
Dick Tracy,
I don't
is
think
his
that
name?
Was his name. Paul I don't think it was Tracy. Dick Tracy.
Oh. It was Paul. Yeah. Dick Tracy, a completely different person. Yeah.
All right, anyway, that's coming up.
Let's begin with Chris and Whittier. I don't know if you guys remember a little while back, but we were giving our ultimate spring breakaway, which was a trip for two to Norway to see Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, right, right.
Because who wants to be there in spring break less than anyone? But Chris from Whittier is our winner. He actually went. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, what's up, Kevin and Bean, man?
How was the trip?
Dude, do I have a story for you, man? I really have a story for you?
Do you have a story for
you? You're on hold. We're hoping so.
Oh, man. You know you called the right guy to go to that right trip, right?
Okay, tell us why.
Okay, man, because I am the ultimate Nine Inch Nails fan.
All right, did we pick the right guy to tell this story? That's the question.
Check this out. I even heard it from, like, the Nine Inch Nails crew man, and even security guards are just tripping out on
Please tell your story.
Out. What happened to you?
Here it is. Dude, I ended up drinking like a half bottle of cognac right before the show.
Oh,
right.
No.
Good.
Yeah. And it didn't end up affecting me until Nine Inch Nails came up on stage, and then I knew that I had to, like, physically and mentally be psyched out not to throw up.
Right. So, okay. Now you're thinking with everything you can in your mind, you're thinking, don't throw up. Please don't throw up. God, don't throw up.
Exactly.
Okay.
I ended up going through the first song, rocking out. 10th song, 19th song, and the last song, Head Like a Hole, man. I don't know what happened, man, but I ended up hurling, dude. I just puked. I puked, like, so bad that, like, dude, it ended up going on this security guard guy.
Oh, no.
Dude, I couldn't even stop puking. He ended up giving me my wife beater.
Yeah.
I didn't say it.
Yes, you did. But
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, well, you did. So you're the ugly American that makes the rest of the world hate us when you come into their country and vomit all over it, right?
Yeah,
he had a hole.
Yes.
We picked the right guy.
Head Like a Hole. They always end with that one. It's always a great, great ender from Nine Inch Nails, and Chris is right up in front puking on everybody.
Oh, my
wow.
God.
Head like an a-hole in the front row there.
Let's talk to Susan in Chatsworth. I got some email on this, too, but I'm not sure I really know what was going on with our pal Paul Moyer over there at Channel 4. Hey, Sue, what'd it do, nephew?
What'd it do, guys?
What'd it do, nephew?
Hey, Sue. What's going on?
Well, I was watching Medium last night, and as soon as the credits were over, they went to black for a few seconds. You couldn't see anything, but you hear Paul Moyer going, and Jay's just going to have to put up with it. That's all there is to it.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And then to a commercial really quick after that.
Paul Moyer is the 900-pound gorilla over there, man. He just screams at people, and they all go running.
Yep.
And if you listen really closely, you can hear him hit his hand on the desk, too.
Yes!
He does that.
He always does.
Oh, that's great.
You couldn't tell what it was he was pissed about, though?
No, somebody named Jay.
Jay?
Yeah,
is he producing over there as well?
I have no idea who Jay is. But
that's awesome.
Remember when Paul was yelling this?
You know, you go home and have a couple of shooters, and I don't know what the f*** happens, but when you come back, you're not the same lady.
Yeah.
And he always bangs the counter and everything.
I don't know what happened.
Patricia Arquette last night after Medium.
I don't know why my hand keeps doing this. Thank you, Susan.
That's awesome, Susan. Paul, you know we love you, right?
The fact of the matter is you guys think I suck.
Oh, well, that's true. That's true also.
There's that, too, as well. All right, let's go to Tyler, who is calling from Santa Monica. Good morning, Tyler.
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. What to do, nephew?
What to do, nephew?
What to do, Lisa May?
Hey, Tyler.
All right, so my band, The Soul Immortal, was playing a show at the Whiskey on Tuesday night.
Yes.
And I put my foot on the edge of the stage to, like, kind of lean over the mosh pit and get them going.
Now, are you a singer or a guitarist?
I'm the singer.
Singer, okay. So you're leaning over the pit.
I'm leaning over the pit, and my foot slips, and I fall off the stage and hit my nose on some shoulder, and it just busts open.
Nice.
Everywhere.
Nice.
And I did get back up on stage, though.
You did, and you kept singing, right?
Yeah, I kept
singing. Awesome. That's a great show right there. I got to tell you, anyone who's broken their nose knows how quickly, it's almost like the blood starts flowing just before you break it.
Really?
It's a weird feeling how it just starts coming immediately. So you explode blood when you break your nose. So that must have been a great sight on scene. Thank you, Tyler. All right.
And there was an a-hole named Chris throwing up in the front row at the same time.
Whole different thing. Let's go to David in Whittier. Good morning, David.
What to do, nephew?
What to do, nephew? By the way, can I just point out to all of the emailers that it's what it do?
No, it's what to do.
No, what to do? Everybody types
what to do.
W-H-A-T-A-D-O, and that's not it at all. It's what it do. Okay, go ahead, David.
All right, so I was getting high with my girlfriend the other night, and we ran out of weed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Long story short, I accidentally called my boss looking to buy some weed.
Oh, you're a madman.
Now, wait a minute. What do you mean you accidentally called your boss? You dialed the wrong number?
Well, he happens to have the same name as the guy I buy weed off of.
So he just pushed the wrong boss or whatever
his name
was. He has
the same first and last name or just first name?
First name.
Just first name.
Okay.
And that's how you had it in your phone.
So how long into the conversation about buying weed did you realize it was your boss?
Well, pretty much I started the conversation off with, hey, can I pick up a quarter?
Right.
And he was like, what? And I was like, weed, obviously.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I don't know. And then he called some people for me.
Did he?
Exciting story.
Was his weed good?
Actually, I didn't wind up going.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. Thank you for the call.
I appreciate Kevin's effort to ask follow-up questions.
Come on. That story tonight. Trying. Trying here.
All right, let's do one more.
Right. Well, do we have time for Julia, too? Because I kind of did want to mention this. I think Julia in Northridge is calling on Kevin. It means, what it do, nephew? What? What's going on?
I don't know.
Now?
Whatever you just said, track Ralph's crap up. Hi, Julia.
What it do?
What it do?
Hey, Julia.
I just had to say, Lost was so good last night. And Ralph, you just missed out.
No, he didn't.
A good episode, Ralph.
Great.
Did you watch it?
One good episode out of how many? Seriously, of the past
dozen. It has been better since you dumped it.
Good.
Then
it works out for everyone. You guys can enjoy it, and I get my life back.
It's like Lost finally jettisoned Ralph. Now it can move on with its life.
It's like a bad relationship.
Yes.
We both need to go our separate ways.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Julia, what did you like last night? You just liked seeing how Juliet made it to the island and why she was there?
Yeah, and she's just so bad. And, I mean, it just opened up some more stuff. But also they answered some things about, you know, what they were doing on the island, like cancer. And I don't know. I just thought it was really good. And Ralph was just on it for the bandwagon. And then once it started going down, he's like, peace.
Why do you care if I watch or not?
Because I love you.
Because she loves it, and she loves you, and she wants to bring you together.
Yeah. Well, get over it.
Just watch your show. Thank you for the call, Julia. I'm sorry, Ralph.
Thank you, Julia.
You know, there are people who feel that we don't do the Lost recaps anymore because you jettisoned them, Ralph, and that's one of the reasons why people are...
But that's not the truth.
I agree. It's not the truth. I know, but that's the impression I think people have.
Mention that while you're hanging me out to dry, but that's not the case.
We couldn't believe it when Ralph quit doing it. We were like, come on, let's do it. And Ralph said, no.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm the puppet master pulling the strings here on this show.
Well, lightning.
All of our guests on today's Kevin and Bean show, including Don Bowles, the drummer for the legendary punk band The Germs. He's going to be in court tomorrow to find out if you could really get sent to prison for the wrong kind of shampoo. So I don't know what that story is, but we'll follow that one for you.
I love soap.
Have you ever met anyone that loves soap more than him? Ever in your life?
Soap.
I met the dude that writes the labels for the soap, man. It was cool.
Every time Kevin called it shampoo, he had to correct him. It was soap.
Sorry,
so you had this bottle of shampoo. It was soap.
Also, what about Mr. Quentin Tarantino for joining us on K-Rock today? His film is currently in theaters called Grindhouse. You ought to go see it. That's all we're saying. And congratulations to Chris Pronger and the Anaheim Ducks for their big win last night in Game 1 of the playoffs against the Minnesota Wild. Game 2 tomorrow night at the Honda Center. Go Ducks.
It was soap.
Tomorrow morning on an all-new Kevin and Bean Show, it's Friday morning. That means we have the movie beat. Ralph will tell you about all the new movies in the theater. We're finally going to get to Lightning on the Mic at the Santa Anita beer pong event this past
weekend. All week.
He apparently was causing people there to bleed, and we have to tell you why, and we have to have an intervention with him.
Well, there's something about Lightning where he can't tolerate 1 second of silence. If he has a microphone, he has to fill up every second that people can hear him.
Yep, that's true. So we'll talk about that tomorrow morning. Also, one of our dogs is trying to commit suicide. I wonder whose dog that could be.
Hmm.
Let's see.
Hope it's Lola.
Dog could be.
Oh,
it's not.
Too bad.
That would have been my guess.
She loves her life and she loves her owner.
That would have been my
Lisa May's dog is trying to get out.
Even the dog knows it's time for it to die.
I don't think that's
Let
true.
Let me out of this life.
Lisa's got it on tubes and machines and oxygen tents and respirators.
It was just an accident.
The dog tried to hang itself. I've never seen that before.
Pull the plug.
She slipped and fell into a noose. It was
yes. That's what Lisa says.
Yeah.
Sweet death is preferable to living another day with you, Lisa. How does that make you feel?
Dog crawled into a gas oven and closed the door behind it.
Turn it on as well.
No, she thought there was food in there.
The dog called a taxi so the car would come up the driveway and she could get run over. That's what I heard.
That's just mean.
Also tomorrow, the ultimate con men, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. And is the king of Mexico smarter than a fifth grader? We'll find out tomorrow morning.
Oh, for you.
Interesting.
For you to know. To put some money down on that tomorrow. That sounds like fun.
Plus, we're going to have King pay the man tomorrow on the Laker Clipper.
Oh, it's the game tonight?
Yep, tonight's the game.
I see.
It's a big one. All right, Cat Corbett's up next with 40 Minutes Nonstop K-Rock. Speaking of Nine Inch Nails in Norway, their new song is called The Beginning of the End. We got that coming from the new CD, Year Zero. If you have not yet heard that, stick around. It's coming up on K-Rock. Plus some Red Hot Chili Peppers, Natch. Also Muse, Bush, Nirvana, Killers, so much more right after this on K-Rock.